Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Tuesday morning, 2nd of September, 2025. Y'all know what's really weird? You want to know a really weird thing? Is when the internal vicissitudes of your business life are completely public. You know what's a very weird feeling that I still haven't gotten used to? Is being a minor celebrity. It's very weird. It's very bizarre. I was telling this to my wife yesterday because she used to work for this company, and recently the company went through a lot of changes, people leaving, new people coming, changing sort of who their market base was. I said, now imagine if at every move during that whole saga, you had thousands and thousands of people all over the internet commenting about it. Wouldn't that be weird? Wouldn't that be kind of crazy? It is kind of crazy. So obviously the big news is last night, Owen Schroyer announced he left InfoWars. And if you want to know why, I suggest you go watch the stream that he did last night. Something like 200,000 people watching simultaneously. It turned out to be a bit of a news story, bit of a big deal. I think he handled it very well. He could have very easily made up drama, which, without naming names, others have done in the past. Try to start his new venture and, you know, claim that he was being silenced or he was... No, he was pretty straightforward, and he just felt like he didn't have enough freedom here, which is a little bit absurd. So here's the weird. So it's weird having thousands of people comment on what happens, you know, with your friends. But it's especially weird when, like, you're the only guy on the internet that's kind of bummed something is happening. It feels a little bit weird to have, like, everybody online be like, great job, congratulations, Owen. Like, you're going to kick ass. And it's like, yeah, I'm sure he is, and I'm happy for him, too. At the same time, you know, we are the team that he's leaving here. So it's a little bittersweet. So it feels a little bit weird. Being like, no, it's great, man, it's good. That'll be great. Where everybody else is just like, yeah, great job, Owen. Go kick butt. It's like, no, it's great, it's good. That'll be good. Frankly, I don't understand it. I don't think it's that great of an idea. And I don't really, have the same issues that apparently he does or did. But he said basically he was planning on leaving anyway. And if you've been paying attention, I mean, it seems like this is a very long time coming. He's launched his own network, the Win Network. But of course, that, you know, also happened around this time last year when we thought InfoWars was being shut down, which I did the same thing. That was when I launched Moonbase. And Owen sort of planning on going solo then, I think, and is just hung on as long as he thought that he could. Again, I think it's a bummer, especially since InfoWars is on the cusp of a transformation ourselves. I mean, because the bankruptcy is coming to an end, this network is probably not going to look the same moving forward. The shows might not be the same as they used to be, might not be the same time slots or even the same format. So things are changing anyway. I'm sure he'll do fine. I'm sure he'll do fine. But at the end of the day, I'm just like, why would you not want to be with Infor? Why would you not want these crews having your back and pulling so much of the weight? And are we not stronger together than independent? So I'm happy for Owen. He's doing what he thinks is best, and I am actually sure that he will succeed wildly in whatever he does. But you know, part of me is gonna miss him too. And it's weird being like the only one on the internet kind of sad about a thing. Again, I'm probably done talking about Owen leaving. It's a bummer, but the show must go on. And I'll just say, you know, a lot of people online, you know, being like, oh, are you going to leave with him? And it's like, why? why would I do that? What? Why would I do that? That doesn't even make sense. But I also think part of it is Owen and I are coming from different places. Owen's always been very, very ambitious. And I think, in a word, if you want to know why he left, I think he felt trapped by Alex Jones's shadow. But, some of that's self-imposed, too. I don't know. We can get into it, but maybe now's not the time. And I got a lot of videos to go to and a lot of news stories to cover and a lot of speculation flying about Donald Trump and others. So we'll move on. But, from my perspective, and I guess probably the big difference between Owen and I, is that Owen always wanted to be a talk show radio guy. And that was always his ambition, still is, and will continue to be. And InfoWars, for a while was the vehicle that he pursued that through. For me, I just wanted to work in InfoWars. And then I just happened to be the one who got a show. They happened to give me a show. But it was sort of incidental to wanting to, be a part of Alex Jones's team. So I got no plans on leaving anytime soon or for any particular reason. But it is sad to know that Owen is going. And it's, to be honest, a little bit different. Well, it's actually very different than, like, Chase. I guess that sort of came out yesterday, too, that Chase isn't working at the headquarters anymore. He now works with Bigley in Arkansas. But he's still doing a lot of the same stuff that he was doing here. He's just doing it remotely now. But it was different with him because, he was only here for like a year, right? Or more or less. I can't even remember. Feels like he was only here for six. No, it was more than 6 months, wasn't it? I don't know. I mean, it was a whirlwind. It was a whirlwind romance with Chase. Guys were coming into the office and doing a whole bunch of work and then going to Bigley. And so, again, still working for InfoWars. Still, he's sort of our bridge between Bigley, which runs the AlexJonesStore.com, and us. But it was, he was here and then he was gone. So, like, everybody that was here before Chase got hired is still here after Chase has left the headquarters. So it feels a little bit different than Owen Schroyer, who joined up about 6 months before me in 2016. I joined spring or a year. I guess he joined a year before me, and I joined in the spring of 2017. So it just feels like the end of an era. And I guess it's the end of multiple eras. I don't know. I guess the era of me being Owen's cameraman and us, getting spit on by rabid communists in New York and hijacking the entire Women's March, or chasing a man dressed like a chicken who was assaulting people at an Antifa rally. I guess that era is over, and it's sad to see it go, personally. But he will, of course, succeed wildly in whatever he does, and we wish him the best of luck. Not that he'll necessarily need it that badly, but that's probably all I'll say about that. Rex Jones will be joining me in the 10 a.m. time slot, and maybe we'll take your calls together, because I do want to take people's calls about this, and I know people probably want to sound off on it as well. Like I said, I was sort of shocked by 200,000 people on a live stream. What? Do you have any idea that how gigantic that is? So really, it shows people are very interested in what's going on here. And that's the beauty of InfoWars, is we are actually entirely up front. And I had people calling, texting me, asking for the inside details. And I'd be texting back, dude, I'm also watching the stream. if you want to know what's going on InfoWars, just watch the shows, watch the streams, just listen to what people say in public. It's actually how we communicate with one another a lot of the time. So, yeah, I think Owen was shooting straight yesterday when he was talking about, the way that he was feeling. And I think he's been frustrated and sort of champing at the bit for like a year now. And look, it ain't easy working in InfoWars. It's just not. And it's just a fact of the matter. It's just the way that it is, because the lawsuits, because the high pressure, the high scrutiny that you're under. But why wouldn't it be? Like, isn't that what you want? I don't know. To me, now is the time for consolidation, not disbursement. I think the media landscape is very exciting. And I think we need institutions to pass on what this is that we've started. I don't personally understand the drive to individualize, because I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of this. I think you're going to start seeing some big personalities from other media outlets going independent very soon. And I personally don't understand that. I don't get it. I think at what point is the market saturated with dudes in their spare bedroom talking to a webcam? I mean, honestly, how many of them do we need? And I'm just being honest. That's if I've ever thought about, like, what would I do if InfoWars shut down? It's like, oh, God, I'd just be another dude. I'd just be another dude in my spare bedroom talking to my camera with my hot takes. Like, I don't even want that. Who would even want to do that? The cool thing about InfoWars is that we have a studio and a crew and incredible guests, and people come in from all over the world and can call in. And I don't know, it's a bigger thing. It's something powerful and long lasting, storied and legendary at this point. I don't know. That's just my personal take. I don't understand why we would have 1,000 rowboats when we could all be on a cruise ship. That's how I picture it. Why wage a war with a bunch of people with, in inner tubes when you could have an aircraft carrier? So I think the future of media we need to be consolidating more. I think we need platforms that can, empower the people on them to be greater than the sum of the parts. But regardless, we are going to dominate the landscape. Like, we together, in whatever form or function or organization it tends to be in the future is us. It's going to be dominated by us one way or another. So, whether that's collectively or, individually, it's very interesting future landscape for the media. So again, we'll be joined by Rex Jones. Maybe we'll take your calls in the third hour, but we got a lot of news to talk about. So let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. Okay, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Tuesday, the 2nd of September, 2025. Donald Trump to make televised announcement at White House. What to know? President Donald Trump is scheduled to make an unspecified announcement on Tuesday afternoon following days of rumors about his health. The president will make an announcement in the Oval Office at 2 p.m., according to the daily guidance and press schedule issued by the White House on Monday night. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt told Newsweek the president will be making an exciting announcement related to the Department of Defense. False rumors that Trump had died began circling on social media on Friday, after some noted he had not been seen in public for several days after attending a cabinet meeting on August 26. He also had no public events over Labor Day weekend. A couple interesting things about this. For one thing, it is a little bit suspicious. There are some strange things going on. There are people noticing stuff like all the roads to Walter Reed Military Hospital being shut down mysteriously at the same time this is happening. You have some strange story about Trump disappeared for 2 days because he personally was watching security footage to find out who cracked marble that was being shipped to the White House or something. There was some weird story about that. It's like, is Trump having a health emergency? Is there something going on? We know that he's been slowing down a little bit recently. We've seen over the last few days, swollen ankles, scars or discoloration on the back of his hand. Is something happening here? Now, the irony of this is that the BlueAnon left-wing schizos are theorizing wildly about how Trump is actually dead and this is a body double and et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, okay. Your president spent literally more than half of his time laying on the beach. Joe Biden spent more than half of his time like a squid on the beach, dead, basically for all intents and purposes, to any reasonable degree, dead. Like, he might as well have been dead. So very funny for them to now be very concerned about the health of the president. Very good bit there. Very funny bit they're putting on, pretending to actually care about this stuff. But also, how illustrative, how interesting is it that Donald Trump is so open, so accessible, so constantly available for questions and explanations and press conferences, that him simply not doing that for 3 days and everybody's sure that he's dead. Everybody's saying that he's dead because he's so accessible, so approachable, so constantly available for comment, that 3 days where he's not doing that, and they're like, the only excuse must be that he's dead, because what else would stop him from talking to us, the American people? So we appreciate Donald Trump being as open and accessible as he is. Again, we'll await whatever this press conference is to say it has to do something with the Department of Defense. Some people are suggesting he's going to retire, he's going to resign. Of course, Trump wrote in all caps, "Never felt better in my life," wrote in a response to a Truth Social to a post from a MAGA influencer who claimed the media freaks out if he disappears for 24 hours. Moving on. Xi and Modi pledged to rebuild China-India ties amid U.S. pressure. China's making pretty big diplomatic gains this week. The meeting followed Modi's earlier discussions with President Xi Jinping, aimed at restoring trust and advancing political, economic, and people-to-people exchanges between the two countries. Cai Qi, a close ally of Xi Jinping and the first official to hold his position since Mao, reiterated China's intent to expand bilateral ties, while Modi emphasized the importance of sustaining border peace. This, of course, comes at the heels of Trump's pressuring India with tariffs, which I'm in favor of and think he should do more of. But it also comes as Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin are meeting to strengthen the ties between Russia and China, as the war in Ukraine doesn't seem like it's ending anytime soon. And we'll return to that in just a little bit. Kennedy's proposal data, autism data project, draws more than 100 research proposals. More than 100 research proposals have been submitted for a $50 million study into the possible causes of autism, with grant winners expected to be announced by the end of September. The program is managed by the National Institute of Health and aims to investigate further contributors to autism and evaluate treatment outcomes. Proposals involve nearly 500 major universities, research institutions, advocacy organizations, and data firms. Dr. Cindy Lawler expressed concern over the rise of autism prevalence in the last 25 years, prompting questions about its causes. Maybe we should investigate that. Hey, maybe it's not a bad idea, and we should be investigating the cause of the unimaginable and unexplained rise of autism. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Here's a crazy story that I think I'm going to go out on a limb here and say what I really think. Four AFD candidates have died suddenly before key state elections. Election officials are racing to print new ballots after the sudden and unexpected death of four Alternative for Deutschland candidates right before the North Rhineland-Westphalia votes. Four Alternative for Germany candidates died suddenly and unexpectedly in Germany's largest state right before the elections. Anger and theories run rife on social media about the sudden death of the AFD candidates. I'll tell you right now, and the number might be six, by the way. I'm seeing other places that have two more people added to this. But they were definitely killed. Like, 100% this is murder. Just flat out. If you have been paying attention, as we have for the last couple of years, you'll know that AFD has been the subject to really insane violence, like state-sponsored, coordinated, paid-for violence against the politicians in AFD, but also just average supporters, that they'll like hack the mailing list and find some dude that's a high school professor and like attack him, like throw rocks through his windows. And this happens over and over and over. And at the same time that AFD is being viciously attacked by mobs of Antifa, and we've covered this over and over, I mean, and way more intense than anything that happens in America, to be honest with you. I mean, we have Antifa here. We've got some crazies here, but AFD, Antifa in Germany, like, kills people with hammers, okay? They're, like, really, really insane there. And at the same time that mobs of black-clad communists are firebombing the houses of random AFD voters, let alone their politicians, the government of Germany is saying AFD are terrorists and shouldn't be allowed to have free speech and shouldn't be allowed to have bank accounts and are being actively discriminated against and targeted for destruction by their government. They are very, very, very scared of AFD coming to power. And so they're killing off the candidates, and that's what's happening. So I know journalistically we're supposed to pretend we don't know what's happening here. Supposed to act like there could be reasonably any other explanation for this, but I want you to really think critically about that and see both the pattern and the trend and the trajectory of what's been happening up until now with relentless attacks, physical attacks on AFD, with the government in support of the attackers and punishing AFD for defending themselves or merely existing, combined with the impossible coincidence of four different candidates in one state in Germany, in one party, all mysteriously dying unexpected deaths right before a major election. Okay, we can all wait for the investigation to happen. We can wait for more. I'm just going to come out right now, go out on a limb here. Pure speculation. I'm just going to say right now, this was murder, and these people were murdered. And what this is in line with everything else that we're seeing here, that I've been seeing over the last little while, which is the globalists are going for broke. They have their accelerator pedal jammed to the floor, and they're desperately trying to install the prison planet operating system as rapidly as possible. And they're willing to take extraordinary risks to achieve that, one of which is killing politicians around the world who dare to stand up against you. So, you know, as we speak, Germany in particular is maximizing and putting into hyperdrive their state surveillance operation with the Cyberdome installation of the Panopticon software. Venezuela is basically surrounded at this point by military vessels. We'll get to that, and we've explained this, and we've explained the run-up to this. You just had, like, the entire government of Yemen killed by Israel. It's killed the prime minister and, like, everybody in the Yemen government. They're going for broke. And it's about to get crazy. I mean, things are about to get completely insane. Just today, the headline from France was saying France is, like, telling everybody, prepare for war, Daily Mail. French hospitals have been told to prepare for a major engagement in Europe by March 2026, possible full-scale war with Russia across NATO. Leaked documents reveal France is bracing for mass casualties, not just from its own forces, but wounded soldiers from across Europe. French hospitals would need to prepare for up to 50,000 beds allocated to wounded civilians and military personnel per month. Yeah, I don't know how much time we have left. I don't know how much time we have left to get a handle on things before everything goes completely off the rails. We'll tell you how we could keep things on the rails here in just a second, but finally we have this. Ro Khanna and Thomas Massie to hold press conference with Epstein victims. People are going to be outraged. With Congress back in session this week, Democratic Representative Ro Khanna of California and Republican Representative Thomas Massie of Kentucky are reigniting their push for the Justice Department to release the Epstein case, the files in the Epstein case. Khanna said that people are going to be outraged after seeing a news conference with he and Massie are holding Wednesday with 10 victims of the late convicted sex offender. So this will be happening tomorrow. The news conference is part of an effort by Khanna and Massie to pass through the House a bill requiring the Justice Department to release the files on the Epstein case. These victims have not spoken for decades. When Epstein got that lenient plea deal, no one talked to the victim or their lawyers, Khanna said Monday in a Fox News digital interview. That'll be happening tomorrow. Again, we're seeing some interesting cross-party cooperation on topics like Epstein and others. That is your Daily Dispatch, brought to you, of course, by TheAlexJonesStore.com. TheAlexJonesStore.com is where you go to keep us on the air and in the fight. And like I said, I mean, I see people all over the internet saying InfoWars is going down because Owen quit to do his own thing. Many have come, many will go. InfoWars lives on. We will never die. And frankly, we're about to get a hell of a lot better very shortly. This is a transformational period, and you can be a part of it. TheAlexJonesStore.com. This weekend was a big news weekend for a number of different reasons. But massive protests have broken out all over the world, not just all over Europe, which happened, of course. The UK really exploded with protests after we broke the news on Friday that the Epping Hotel, in fact, I've got the video, clip 8 here. Let's see, how long is this? Because they make it very clear why they made the decision that they did. It's only a minute long. So we'll start with clip 8 and then we'll go to clip 11. But massive protests erupting across the UK as well as across Australia. Just massive protests got a little bit out of hand all over the world. Japan also holding massive remigration protests as this topic has really come to the fore. And I just hope it's not too little too late. Now, on Friday, we had Jack Hadfield on the show, and he was there on the ground. He got pepper sprayed, you know, after he was talking with us and breaking the information about the decision made by the Epping judge. So let me break this down for you. A migrant hotel opened up in a town called Epping, where little girls were assaulted, or there was an attempted assault, and some of the migrants were preying on some of the young girls who went to school within walking distance of this migrant hotel. Big protest broke out at the Epping Hotel from the locals saying, we don't want to have to deal with this. Why are our daughters being subjected to assault? This is absurd. We want these people out of here. At the same time, they figured out, the Epping Town Council figured out, that the hotel had never reorganized to be a charity and to host migrants. So it was still operating under the same license that was supposed to just be, you know, it had a license to be a hotel and to serve customers. Now it had reorganized and, you know, reconstructed itself to be a migrant hotel serving, you know, purely illegal immigrants with government contracts. And they'd never actually filed the paperwork to change their business operations. So the town council said, all right, well, then you're going to have to shut down because you didn't follow the right process. You didn't do this lawfully. So we're going to shut you down. And to be honest, you know, in a way, it was sort of a bureaucratic workaround to get what you want anyway. Like, people wanted this out, and it was like, okay, what can we do to get these people out? Well, they improperly filed their paperwork. They didn't file their paperwork. They're operating outside of their, you know, what they're licensed to legally do. So there's the excuse that you need. You guys got shut down. You didn't do the license. Instead of allowing this to happen, the high court or the whoever it is in the federal government of the UK, the national government of the UK decided to fight this and decided they wanted to keep it open. And the judge said in no uncertain terms, he was rejecting the call from the town council to shut down the hotel. He was keeping the hotel open because he didn't want to inspire more protest. He actually says, and we'll go to the video here, clip number 8, that basically if they allow that this protest leads to the closure of a migrant hotel, then every migrant hotel would be subject to protest and they'd have to close all of them. And that would interfere with their ultimate goal of genociding the British people to create a deracinated slave race to lord over. But that's farther down the line. Let's go to clip number 8 here. This is Lord Gaywad. Let's watch.
The Epping residents' fear of crime was properly taken into account by the judge as a factor in favour of the grant of an injunction. He described it as being of limited weight. The appellants do not say it was irrelevant. The council does not say it should be decisive. We agree that it is relevant, but in our view, it is clearly outweighed in the American cyanamid balancing exercise by the undesirability of incentivizing protests.
By the undesirability of incentivizing protests. Of
preserving the status quo for the relatively brief period leading up to the forthcoming trial.
And okay, so we can bring it down. I mean, good Lord. So he's trying to make it boring on purpose. Is that not a very weird justification? I mean, does that not therefore just like eliminate protest as a concept? So he's saying, I'm not going to do this thing because I don't want to incentivize protesting. So in other words, I'm not going to do this thing because you protested. Because you want me to do this thing, that is therefore a reason for me not to do the thing. What? Is you just heard him say it in a albeit very boring and drawn out way. But I mean, he just let you know, we're not going to shut down the migrant we're not going to shut down the migrant encampment because you protested and wanted us to do that. And if we do that, then it will just show other people that, yeah, protesting works and you can stand up against your government and make them, you know, change their decision to benefit you. And we can't have that. We can't set that precedent of having protests that lead to something. That's a little bit odd. I mean, odd's not the right word. It's not a little bit odd. That's tyranny. That's just tyranny. Just flat out, that's what it is. That's how it works. That's how it looks. Because you're protesting something, I therefore am not going to let you do it, because if I let you do it, then it will just show you that protesting works and it will incentivize more protesting, and I don't want more protesting, so therefore I'm going to do the thing that you're protesting against. Yeah, I think we went off the rails. I think Britain as a concept went way off the rails a long time ago. You people need help. You need God. You need the type of help only God can provide. Or guns. Guns can also provide that sort of help. But another interesting development here in the UK. We'll go to clip number 11 here, starting at a minute, of course. Low Love Dundee, the little girl with the axe and the knife that became a symbol of, you know, this new round of nationalism being embraced, the flag raising, everything else. There was some back and forth. There was some speculation. There was some insinuation and assertions on both sides of some people saying, you know, here's the real story. This girl is protecting her sister who was sent to the hospital. But then, like, The Guardian and all these leftist papers were interviewing the migrant involved and saying, actually, he's just a peaceful Bulgarian or whatever who is, you know, just living off taxpayer money and council flats and was just walking to the store, minding his own business, as innocent as can be, when he was assaulted and set upon by these vicious children, these vicious preteen girls. On their way. These members of the insane clown posse set upon him viciously. There he was, minding his own business. You know, it's a story as old as time. Man minding his own business, doing nothing to anybody. When the out-of-control, vicious nature of the preteen girl, you know, comes to the fore. Okay, it was all absurd from the beginning. We now have, like, actual confirmed statement from a girl that was there on the ground. She's in the video telling the story. And you would think it wouldn't be this hard to get the real story. You would think such a monumental and gigantic story that swept the world and became, you know, iconic. You would think the mainstream media would pursue it to some degree at some point, other than just telling whatever lie the migrant told about I wasn't doing anything and I was set upon by these, you know, vicious Celtic women. It's all absurd. So this is a girl, Maya, who was there. It was actually in the video. Her voice is there. She's the one that called 911 out of all of it. So here's the actual story from somebody that was actually on the ground. No, it was not an innocent migrant man assaulted by these poor girls. It was an attempted sexual assault, and these girls obviously defending themselves. Let's watch.
We just were walking past him, and as we walked past him, he made some remarks to Lola, saying, "Oh, you're so..." And we were like, that's not okay. So obviously Lola's sister was not happy because Lola's 12. So yeah, like I was saying, Ruby was like, "Oh, go away, she's 12." And the man then again said, "Oh, she's so..."
So we were like, sexy.
We did show at him. Like, I am not going to lie and say that we didn't show at him, because we did. And I feel like that's the only way that people will believe me that I'm being truthful. We did shout at this man after he called Lola, because we were like, "She's 12, that's not right," and he proceeded to do it again. So after this man did it again, we were shouting at him, and I was like, "Okay, let's just leave it." So I literally dragged both girls away, and we started walking again, and then the man started following us. He followed us from the top of the car park, which is like here, and it's just straight. So he followed us all the way, and then he followed us down. But the reason we know he was following us is because at first he was walking the opposite direction with a friend. Because I've seen a lot of people speculating online that he was with his wife, but he was not. He was with another male. He was not with a woman, and nor did he have a baby in a pram. Because if he had a baby in a pram, this whole situation would be a lot different, because we wouldn't have even shouted at him if there was a baby there. But there was not a baby there. So this male was with another male. And they could have been going to the shop. They were walking in the direction of the shops. But he was not with his wife. So as he followed us, we were like, "Why are you following us? Stop following us. Why are you following us?" Like, we just kept repeating that same thing. "Stop following us. Why are you following us? Stop following us. Why are you following us?" So basically, at this time, yes, we are getting loud, because we're like, "Why is this man following us?" When we have clearly stated to him that, well, one of us is 12, so none of us can be much older, because I, myself, am 14. My best friend Ruby is 13, Lola is 12, and then the two other girls we were with are both 14. And another man approaches us, because he hears the commotion. And he goes to the man that's following, like, so basically, he asks us if we know the man that was following us. When we say no, he's like, "Oh, leave them alone, stop following them, why are you following them? They're a bunch of children, like, why are you following bairns?" We don't know what bairns means, it's just like a Scottish word for children. And basically, this man was like, "Why are you following children, stop following bairns?" And the man who is following us, they've got like forehead to forehead, like they were about to fight. And they were just saying stuff to each other that none of us could really hear, because it was like they were speaking, but they were forehead to forehead. And then the man who was following us decides to push the other guy who came up and tried to see if we were okay. So when the other guy gets pushed, he just walks away. He didn't want to deal with the situation because he didn't want to fight somebody, which I understand. And then this man... the man who followed us, he is now on the phone to somebody that nobody knows who it is. Whilst this man is on the phone, he's speaking in a different language. We cannot understand him. And can I just make this clear? This was not anything to do with race, because we were walking away. We were not going towards that man. We were walking the opposite direction and the man approached us. I am not a racist. My friends are not a racist. This was nothing to do with his race. We didn't even know that he was from Bulgaria. So this could not have been a racial attack. This was self-defense in my eyes.
All right, so
he's
pull it down there. If we can, I want to start it again at 5:45. So this is part one of a two-part video. Each one's like 10 minutes long. This is what actually happened here from somebody that was on the ground. And she's a 14-year-old, made this TikTok video explaining exactly what happened. He actually did have Scottish men, interfering and saying, hey, what are you doing? But then when things started to get violent, the guy got pushed. He sort of threw his hands up and said, you know what? I'm out. I'm not, it's not worth it. Because, he knows. I'm sure he knows. You defend yourself, you're the one who's going to go to jail. So we'll go back to the video here. Again, we'll get into the massive protest this weekend and everything. But we spent a week talking about Lola from Dundee, speculating wildly about it. Here's the actual story. And it's funny. This girl's like, I'm not sure if we'll show the part, but she basically is like, we had no idea. This girl pulls out a knife and an axe, and we're like, what the hell? They had no idea she was armed. They're 14. They're 14-year-olds or girls. But again, the important thing, they were approached. This guy wasn't just going to the store. He was approaching them. He was following them. They were saying, leave us alone. She's only 12. He was making sexual remarks to them, which is completely in contradiction to everything that The Guardian or The Daily Mail said when they interviewed this guy, and he lied about it top to bottom. Here's the actual story again. I trust this girl. I think she's telling the truth. Everything she says aligns with what we see in the video and with everything else we know about what's going on. Back to the video.
His sister, who everybody's saying his wife, it's not his wife. I have looked on his social media and I know that that is his sister. He also told the police officers that that is his sister. But basically his sister comes flying around the corner. His sister then grabs my friend Ruby from behind, and both of them, the male and the female, jump on my friend, start kicking her in the head, punching her in the face. And she actually had to get sent to hospital. She has a severe concussion and swelling inside of her head. I forgot what I was about to say. But yeah, we haven't been given photos from when my friend is at the hospital yet. So obviously I don't have anything to support that just now. But I can swear down that I am telling the truth and nothing but the truth. Because if I was lying about this whole situation, I would not be making a video. I would not be trying to really get my truth out. And I have commented under multiple posts saying that that is not me, because people have been putting my name and thinking that I am the one who had the weapons, but I am not. So anyway, like I was saying, they both jump on my friend Ruby, and at this point I see this happen. So I walk away into like a corner. You can see me on the video, but you cannot see my face or anything because I have walked away. As I have walked away, I phone the police. And as I am as I'm calling the police, Lola whips out weapons that none of us knew that she had on her. I want to make that very clear. Me and Ruby had only met with her like an hour prior, and we did not know that she had weapons on her. If she had weapons on her, we would have not been with her. And none of us knew that she had them on her. I literally cannot stress that enough, because people are thinking that we all knew that she had them on her and that we were all supporting her carrying weapons, but none of us knew that she had that on her.
All right, there's a longer video. We can take it down. Again, Lola just sounds like a badass. Friends are just like, what? We had no idea she had weapons. Like, yeah, well, good thing you did. Good thing you did. So we now have the full story, and it was exactly what we thought it was and what, we heard it was by the rumors. You've got two girls and their friends minding their own business when they are, catcalled by a guy who starts calling them sexy, starts making, inappropriate comments to them. They try to leave. They start, running away from the guy. The guy's chasing them, following them, continuing to make comments. Another, man gets involved. A Scottish man gets involved, tells the guy to leave him alone. That guy, it gets violent. So that guy leaves. They keep bothering them. The guy's sister and the guy assault one of the girls, are kicking her in the head when the other friend finally pulls out weapons and the migrant guy pulls out his camera, approaches them, starts filming them, knowing that if they try to defend themselves, he'll destroy their lives by filming them and, you know, getting them arrested for having weapons. So that's it. So now we have the full story. It's exactly what we said it was. It is in exact contradiction to everything that the migrants said and claimed in the mainstream media interviews that have since spread a distorted view of this reality. But again, that's not even the, you know, central case when it comes to the big protest in the UK, where you have the Epping Hotel being the location of, you know, multiple attempted assaults and assaults leading to the protest, leading to an injunction trying to remove the migrant hotel's license to operate, leading to the judge interfering and saying, no, we need to allow this to go on because otherwise we're going to prove that protesting works, and we can't allow that. We can't have people think that you can peacefully, you know, admonish your own government and demand that they change policy. Because obviously, when you get rid of the ability to peaceful protest, everybody just becomes happy with what's going on, and they shut up and deal with it, right? Or do they then turn to violence every time, inevitably, because people will not stand for having their daughters raped and their government in full support of it, even though they have up till now. But we have so many stories about this.
Well, the reality of the situation is that these kids, whether it's this guy who took the video or some other person, these kids are walking around armed because the reality is that it is happening. Right. Right. There's evidence. Maybe this guy, you know, whether it was or it wasn't, the reality on the ground is that kids are having to arm themselves because of this problem. And it shows because they were ready. They were armed. And when they saw red flags, which this guy was probably giving them, I mean, what adult doesn't suspect that this guy was antagonizing kids?
According to that
right.
girl, you know, he was. And he wasn't leaving him alone. And they were telling him, hey, she's 12 years old. He was
like, are you telling me this guy with this neck tattoo is not a model citizen?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, come on now.
Exactly. No, he's a dirtbag, and they lied about it completely. And again, people are just fed up with this. You've got to understand that it's all on purpose. You really, again, I mean, I don't want to repeat myself over and over, but like, if there's one thing you understand, it's got to be that this is on purpose. That's not an accident that they are deliberately replacing your population with hostile foreigners. That doesn't happen by accident. Even if they wanted to do it by accident, there's like a million different ways that they could do it that would not bankrupt them in the process, but they are actively choosing to bankrupt themselves in this process. Let's go to clip number two here. £66 billion for migrants while the NHS collapses and British people go hungry. Let's watch.
£6 billion. I thought there was no money, by the way. There's no money. Big fiscal hole.
No.
6.6 billion. Cost of asylum. This isn't the cost of asylum seekers. This is the cost of asylum seekers' support. What do I mean by that? So we paid £6.6 billion on asylum seeker and refugee support schemes. Wait for this. This is trips to the zoo and tennis lessons. This is according to the Sunday Express. It also includes sandwich deliveries, friendship services, a visit to Arsenal. The idea behind all of this is to help them integrate into British life. I'll tell you what, I quite like a trip to the zoo or Arsenal or whatever. Also, all of these schemes, the massive cost was racked up in 200 government and local council-funded schemes over the past few years. So the people in the Wethersfield Asylum accommodation site were given £20,000 worth of sports coaches and equipment for activities such as volleyball, tennis, athletics, four times a day, more than most children get. Hundreds of thousands of pounds have been given to befriending schemes where asylum seekers and refugees were given a mentor. How about teaching them English? Also, they were then given SIM cards. Now, apparently, according to the Home Office, each of these asylum seekers have to have 60 gigabytes of data. What are you doing with 60 gigabytes of data? Don't you just need a phone?
Mm. Yes, well, not downloading Duolingo, well, I should imagine, but...
No! Well, maybe they should be given Duolingo.
Maybe, maybe. But interesting, I'm a frequent visitor to Arsenal.
And yes, you are.
I am, yeah. Yes. And they are sponsored by Visit Rwanda.
Is that right?
So you never know that they've...
Is that right? That's
under the Tories,
brilliant.
They might have been visiting Rwanda a bit quicker than what they are now, because it's obviously been scrapped.
So there you go. $6.6 billion on trips to the zoo and sports cars and free phones. But, you know, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to schedule that crucial surgery. So you are going to be going blind, and your grandmother did die. But we're just out of money. We have no money behind them, just like migrants on roller coasters, just like free cotton candy. Just like, sorry, nothing we can do. You have to die now. You have to go die. But, I gotta go. We got a concert in the park we're putting on for the migrants. It's just super expensive. It's gonna be really amazing. The production, out of the world. But yeah, sorry about you dying. That was unfortunate. Keep talking about the UK for a little bit, but we have a lot of domestic news to get into. But this is a major story that just broke this morning. A comedian has been arrested in the UK over three tweets. Graham Linehan.substack.com. I just got arrested again, he says, in hospital after my adventure. He's got an IV drip there. He says this. Something odd happened before I boarded the flight in Arizona. He's flying to the UK. He boarded the flight in Arizona. When I handed over my passport at the gate, the official told me I did not have a seat and had to be reticketed. At the time, I thought this was a sort of innocent snafu that makes air travel such a joy. But in hindsight, it was clear I'd been flagged. Someone, somewhere, probably wearing unconvincing makeup and his sister/wife/mom's underwear, had made a phone call. The moment I stepped off the plane at Heathrow, five armed police officers were waiting. Not one, not two, five. They escorted me to a private area and told me I was under arrest for three tweets. In a country where pedophiles escape sentencing, where knife crime is out of control, where women are assaulted and harassed every time they gather to speak, the state has mobilized five armed officers to arrest a comedy writer for this tweet. And no, I promise you, I'm not making this up. Here's the tweet that required the mass deployment here. Quote, if a trans-identified male is in a female-only space, he is committing a violent, abusive act. Make a scene, call the cops, and if all else fails, punch him in the balls. He wrote that on the 20th of April. He also wrote this. He did a picture of a crowd and wrote, a photo you can smell. Which I'm not even sure who this is a crowd of, but apparently they smell bad. And then a follow-up to that one, I hate them, misogynists and homophobes, F them. So I wonder if that was a crowd of Muslims, and he's saying he doesn't like Islam's intolerance. It doesn't matter, though. It doesn't. None of it really matters. The point is that they arrested a comedian for what are very obviously jokes. When I first saw the cops, he says, I actually laughed. I couldn't help myself. Don't tell me. You've been sent by the trans activists. The officers gave no reaction, and this was the theme throughout most of the day. Among the rank and file, there was a sort of polite bafflement, entirely professional and even kind, but most had absolutely no idea what any of this was about. Kind, because the officers saw how upset I was. When they began reading me my rights, the red mist descended, and I came close to becoming one of those police body cam videos where you can't believe the perp isn't just doing what he's told, and they treated me very gently after that. They even arranged for a van to meet me on the tarmac so I didn't have to be perp-walked through the airport like a terrorist. Small mercies. At Heathrow Police Station, my belt bag and devices were confiscated. Then I was shown into a small green-tiled cell with a bunk, a silver toilet in the corner, and a message from Crime Stoppers on the ceiling next to a concave mirror that was presumably there to make you reflect on your life choices. By some miracle, probably because I hadn't slept on the flight, I managed to doze off after the premier economy seat, which I'd just spent 10 hours. It was actually a relief to stretch out. That passed the time, though I kept waking up, wondering if it was all actually happening. Later, during the interview itself, the tone shifted. The officer conducting it asked about each of the terrible tweets in turn with a sort of earnest intensity, usually reserved for discussing something like, I don't know, actual crime. I explained that the punch tweet was a serious point made with a joke. Men who enter women's spaces are abusers. They are abusers, and they need to be challenged every time. The punch in the bollocks bit was about the height difference between men and women, the bollocks being closer to punch level for a woman defending her rights, and certainly not a call to violence, not one of my best. As one of the female officers says, we're not that small. Okay. He mentioned trans people. I asked what he meant by that phrase. People who feel their gender is different than assigned at birth. I said, assigned at birth, our sex isn't assigned. He called it semantics. I told him he was using activist language. The damage Stonewall has done to the UK police force will take years to mend. But the rapist migrants arriving by the millions, nobody's stopping them. Five officers in an overnight stay in a jail cell. We're talking about what's happening in the UK. We got so many other stories to get to as well. But I think what's happening in the UK is really important, especially I think it's important for InfoWars to be on this and talk about this. We are a worldwide outlet after all. And nobody else is telling these stories. Nobody else is explaining stuff. I don't know if any outlet in existence has played the video from the girl that was actually on the scene with the Lola of Dundee knife and axe wielding hero. So we're going to tell you these stories. We're going to explain this to you, especially because it's a warning. It is a prediction of what's coming here and what they plan on doing to the world at large. But finishing up with this story of this comedian arrested for his tweets, Graham Linehan. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but Linehan maybe. Eventually, he says, a nurse came to check on me and found my blood pressure was over 200. That's stroke territory. The stress of being arrested for jokes was literally threatening my life. So I was escorted to an A&E, which is like their ER, where I write this now after spending about 8 hours under observation. The doctor suggested that high blood pressure was stress-related, combined with long-haul travel and lack of movement. I feel it may have also been a contributing factor that I have now spent 8 years being targeted by trans activists working in tandem with police in a dedicated, persistent harassment campaign because I refuse to believe that lesbians have cocks. The police themselves, for the most part, were consistently decent throughout this farce. Some were even Father Ted fans. Thank God the Catholic Church never had with the police the special relationship granted to trans activists. The male officers were mostly polite but clearly nonplussed by the politics of it all, just doing their jobs. However insane those jobs had become, the female officers seemed more tuned in to what was actually happening. One mentioned the Sandy Peggy case in a certain way, and I realized I was among friends, even if they couldn't admit it. I looked at the single bail condition. I am not to go on Twitter. That's it. This, I think, is the interesting twist to this. His one bail condition is he's not allowed to use the X platform. Not all social media, just Twitter. Just X he's not allowed to use, apparently, as a condition of his bail. They say no threats, no speeches about the seriousness of my crimes, just a legal gag order designed to shut me up while I'm in the UK, and in demand I face a further interview in October. The civility of individual officers does not alter the fundamental reality of what happened. I was arrested at an airport like a terrorist, locked in a cell like a criminal, taken to a hospital because the stress nearly killed me, and banned from speaking online, all because I made jokes that upset some psychotic cross-dressers. To me, this proves one thing beyond a doubt. The UK has become a country that is hostile to freedom of speech, hostile to women, and far too accommodating with the demands of violent, entitled, abusive men who have turned the police into their personal goon squad. Here's the epilogue. At one point, I said, I bet I knew who made this complaint. Lindsay Watson, demented ex-copper troon who was fired for his online conduct. Then, lo and behold, one of my lawyers sent me this reply to the bollocks tweet. And it's a... That weirdo ex-copper claims he just reported this to the police and is trying to get other troons to do so, just FYI. So apparently this guy was involved with this. He's also involved in my other case on Thursday and Friday at London Westminster Magistrates Court. Trans activists are planning to protest, so bring the nose plugs. So, Graham Linehan, arrested and treated like a criminal for his tweets, which isn't anything new for the UK, but is a shocking warning of where we're headed. You know, I saw a video earlier today, and I probably should have grabbed it. Yeah, J.K. Rowling, what the F has the UK become? This is totalitarian, utterly deplorable. Yeah, well, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it, though? The question of the police is a very interesting one. So I saw this video earlier today. I probably should have described it, but it was a little bit much for me. But now that I'm reading this stuff, I'm like, maybe that's something valuable to show, because clearly the police are working against their own interest. The police are the foot soldiers for the army that is arrayed against them. They are acting as the functionaries to achieve a goal in which their eradication is the ultimate end, right? I think they understand in a certain way. They're like, man, if the police can be used to shut down protests, if the police are being used to silence opposition to the influx of migrants, so the police are shutting down the opposition, so the migrant flux continues. And eventually, when all of the resistance evaporates and is crushed by the police themselves will be the subject of eradication. And so they understand that in a way. Some of them do. Others are just, you know, going along and getting a paycheck. Some of them probably are true believers, but do we need another lesson about, like, just following orders? And what is it going to take to break through to the police that, like, you are literally, in just the most flagrant and obvious way, you're being used to destroy your own country? When you've got busloads of random Afghan men being bused to a small village in the UK, and the villagers come out to say, hey, what the hell is this? Who are these people? We don't want them here. And then you stomp on those villagers' faces. How do you even justify that internally? How do you even frame that as, well, we're just serving law and order? And, you know, what is even the justification for that? What is the argument that's been made? Because it's nonsense, whatever it is. And they're being brutal. I mean, we can bring down the audio because some of the yelling gets a little bit intense. We can go to some of these clips of the protests of people. You know, clip number 10, locals interacting with the police. We can go ahead and roll this as B-roll. It's happening in the UK. That's clip number 10 here. Crew's looking at trans people. Yeah, so this is a guy, you know, being thrown to the ground and arrested for daring to protest peacefully against the takeover of his homeland. And here you have the traitors in the bright yellow vests stomping on their necks for daring to make demands about their homeland and their country and their hometown. And there's a bunch of examples about this. We have a lot of videos. We have a lot of videos about this. Let's go to clip number 9 here. Bring the audio up for clip 29. This is another example of exactly how this has been going for the last little while. Here's another protest, another arrest being made at a protest. Let's watch.
Because a filthy migrant just spat on me.
Yeah, that is
and you've got the issue with me.
We have a duty to challenge that language, yeah, because we're police officers. And it's
because he's filthy and he's migrant and he attacked me like the other one.
We're trying to help you report
which is
that,
offensive, isn't it?
We can't not challenge that language because
there's people in the public.
Okay, what's your numbers? So you'll find my language is spent offensive. 1483.
No, I do find it.
3028.
I'm still happy to help you with your
1192.
Challenge you when you use language like that.
Especially when you're in the public as well, because obviously. People walking past
those. I think filthy migrants attacking English people is disgusting.
Yeah, you're also swearing as well, madam.
And that's an issue. Well, since when are swearing a crime?
We've spoken to you with respect too. Like
and you're in public where there's people kicks
are human
far
beings
away.
Just doing our job.
People can hear that.
Well, I'm not interested in a PC lecture. If you want
to
take my details, that's fine.
So a woman gets spit on by a migrant, says, what the hell, you just spit on me, you filthy migrant. And the police go and question her and let the migrant go. Meanwhile, asylum seekers are given new 300,000-pound townhouses with en-suites, EV charging points, and underfloor heating while locals battle to get on the property ladder. Asylum seekers are being housed in 300,000-pound, three-bedroom, contemporary townhouses in a village in Suffolk to the fury of local residents. The four conjoined properties are furnished with ensuite bathrooms, sleek kitchens, and state-of-the-art amenities, including underfloor heating and electric vehicle charging points, The Sun reported. According to promotional materials, the homes are nestled in the tranquil and sought-after village and designed for modern living and comfort, providing ample space and eco-friendly amenities. Representing a perfect blend of modern design, comfort, and sustainability, the houses are said to offer a serene living experience for Muhammad and his 11 cousins. Plenty of roomy basement to chain white girls in. Isn't that lovely and amazing? Asylum seekers living in the property are doing so rent-free, with the expected rent in the area coming in around £1,200 for a home of this size. Instead, the houses have been leased by public services firm Serco under a contract with the Home Office. It's believed that only one family has moved into the townhouses so far and that they arrived by legal route, not on a small boat. So, again, while citizens of the UK are being squeezed out of their hometowns and incapable of affording a place to live, even if they work all day, every day, and have for years, while migrants are given $300,000 townhouses with underfloor heating for free for arriving the day before. Is this an accident, folks? I mean, at what point do you have to recognize that the British people are just paying hand over fist for their own destruction? And how there is no argument in favor of this. There is no argument that says the British people are benefiting from this, are required and obligated to do this, are bringing this about as a necessity. They're just voluntarily taking all of your money and giving it to foreigners to live in your homeland. And of course, the twist to this is that most of these properties, most of the migrant hotels where these people are being held, are themselves owned by foreigners. So it's like you're not even benefiting, you're not getting any of the money anyway. So they're taking taxpayer dollars from UK citizens, giving it to a foreign corporation to house foreign men, and then again on taxpayer money, providing the bodyguard armed soldiery to defend and protect the foreign interlopers, the foreign colonists, from the outrage of the displaced natives. Again, it's like, I don't even know. Like, do you think anti-colonialist people in Africa ever had this problem? Do you think they ever had to go to an African tribe and be like, hey guys, you're being colonized? Did they have to explain? Like, it feels weird to have to explain, like, you're being taken over and displaced. Do you not know this? It's like going to the Native Americans in like the 1730s or whatever, early 1800s, like the Trail of Tears time, being like, hey guys, you know you're being replaced with white people, right? Do you guys see that? And they're just like, racist? What are you talking about? But it's even worse than that, because at least the Native American chiefs weren't themselves the ones selling out their own people. So there is a difference there. But I don't know if there's ever been a situation in human history where, like, a population being invaded, replaced, conquered, eradicated, has to be told that that's happening, has to, like, be told that they should care about that. And I mean, I guess it's appropriate that at the same time you have the hyper-sensitive censorship against trans people stuff, because what we're dealing with, whether it's trans or the migrant crisis is a collapse of fundamental and basic understanding of what it is to be human, and like a continuation of your tribe and your blood and your family and the loyalty that you show to those around you, near you, like you, who are you. In the same way, to explain to somebody that a boy's a boy and a girl is a girl, it's like, I guess what we're dealing with here is a wholesale across the board inversion of just basic fundamental reality to dislocate the human mind away from what is real and tangible and that you can grasp onto as a firm basis for understanding the wider construct of the world. They just want you out floating, unsure of anything. Nothing is real. Everything is true. Everything is false. Nothing is real. Nothing is tangible. The sex is variable and nationhood is irrelevant and made up and families are oppressive. I mean, it is a wholesale attack on the fundamental, foundational, central concept of humanity itself that is being dissolved with the acid of liberalism and globalism as a whole. And what you really, really got to learn is first understand that this isn't an accident, and then understand that they're going to try to do it here next. Okay, here's Jesse Kelly explaining this to everybody in case you couldn't see it yourself. Let's watch.
What I just described in the UK is everything America's Democrats want for you and your town. Gunless, defenseless, hordes of barbaric foreigners in your child's school with your daughter, your wife being preyed upon, and you not even allowed to defend them. If they so much as think you're insulting them, they would throw you in prison in a heartbeat. And you know the only reason that we are not exactly where they are is because we have guns. Did you know that? It is the only reason. If they had a monopoly on force, a monopoly on violence, they would bring horrors into this country like you can't possibly imagine. And they know it. And they know that your possession of guns, whether or not you personally have them, they know the patriotic Americans' possession of guns is the one thing that stops them from doing everything they're currently doing in the UK, in Ireland, in Scotland, in Germany, in France. All those people who run those countries, they all share the same sick, demonic, communist religion of America's Democrats. And the only reason you are not prey like a French woman wandering through the Muslim part of town is because you and yours have guns that you can use to kill bad people with. And the government knows it. America's Democrats know it. They know that your arms are the only thing that holds them back from doing all these things and worse to you. And they hate it.
100%. And remember, the Second Amendment is there to ensure the First remains in place. And understand that right now the British are doing everything within their power, everything within their capability to fight back against a system that despises them and is actively working for their complete destruction and historical eradication. They're using and making use of every legal possibility to try to turn this thing around, as they are in France, as they are in Germany, as they are everywhere else. And what's happening, they're being told that the migrant hotel will stay in Epping specifically because you're protesting against it. Because you're protesting against it, we're going to allow the migrant shelter to stay, because otherwise you would learn the lesson that protesting is effective. Well, if protesting isn't effective, if it's actually now inverted and they're using the protest itself as an excuse to not do the thing the protest is protesting against, or to do the thing that they're protesting against, the only other option is violence. But of course, the violence that the left is able to wield is so much greater for so many different reasons. For one, they've got the state law enforcement apparatus firmly in their grasp, and the police are all, you know, compartmentalized and just follow orders. Just, oh, that guy needs to be arrested? All right, we'll go arrest him. Only later in the interrogation room do they realize, wait, I arrested this guy for speech? That doesn't seem right, but here we are. But here we are, I did it, so now I'm in. But they also have the Muslims themselves, which more and more rumors are circulating around about weapons caches being found in some of these mosques in England. And of course, we've seen the video of the police saying, go back to your mosque with your weapons, put them away. And then you've got the Antifa scum, foot soldiers of the evil, who themselves will go and disrupt and interrupt and try to cause problems in all of these protests. But the end is nigh. I think it's over. I think we're reaching the end. I think we're about to see one of two things. We're either going to see this protest movement grow exponentially and actually result in the genuine overthrow of some countries. That could be Australia, could be the UK, could be France or Germany. Like it seems like what they're doing is trying desperately to start a wider war between NATO and Russia, sort of thinking that it'll be like the old days where we got a bunch of internal strife, so we make an external enemy to bring everybody together. I don't know if that's going to happen. I've been saying this for a while. I almost want them to like try to do the draft or something in America and Europe, everywhere, to force the European people to ask the question like, okay, you have to fight. Who are you going to fight for? Are you actually going to go fight for this government that's trying to destroy you and made your life miserable and, you know, didn't help your sister when she was a victim of a grooming gang? Like, why would they fight for them? But you're going to go to jail. So I think it would just put a lot of people in the position of, okay, I guess it's time to fight the government. Like, if I got to fight somebody, I got no beef with Russia. It's the politician down the street that I have a problem with. I'll go fight him instead. You want me to fight? I'll fight. Not for you, against you. So it's almost like they're trying to start a war with Russia to kickstart patriotism in the continent of Europe, but I don't think that's going to work this time. I don't think the old paradigm is going to happen. Elon Musk today tweeted out like white feathers for the peaceniks or something, which he's been very much on board with the protest and been encouraging the UK to fight back. It's like, I don't think you understand what the white feather thing was, Elon. The white feather thing was a scam to shame men into dying pointlessly for a useless and horrific war. We're against the white feather society. We'll probably talk a little bit more about Owen leaving and the sort of media landscape. I do find it a little bit ironic, a little bit coincidental that on the day Owen Schroyer announces he's leaving InfoWars, Jerry Nadler says he's not running for re-election in 2026. Now, as you know, there's a bit of a history between Owen Schroyer and old Jerry. Old Jerry Nadler. Jerry Antifa doesn't exist, Nadler. U.S. Representative Gerald Nadler announced he will not seek re-election in 2026, ending his 34-year congressional career, according to media reports. He is very excited and looking forward to embarking on a new career as a blimp. He's going to become a blimp, and he's going to spend his retirement floating above stadiums, providing joy and delight for children all around the country. So it's very good to see that some use is coming from the size and shape of his pantaloons. Okay. All right. We're going to get more here of what's going on domestically. There's Owen Schroyer interrupting Jerry Nadler. And look, as iconic as this moment was, to me, the most shocking thing about all of it was that you can have a room full of people sitting listening to Jerry Nadler talk, and only one of them gets up and starts screaming in fury. I've been in a room with Jerry Nadler sitting, you know, as the chairman presiding. It takes a lot of self-control to not do what Owen did. It is very difficult to not stand up and start shouting at Jerry Nadler when he's talking in that way that he does, telling the lies that he tells. It's treatment he deserves forever. So I found that a little bit coincidental. I do want to remind you that despite the rumors you may be hearing right now, InfoWars is not going anywhere anytime soon. And again, to me, sort of the, it's been a while, and it's not anything that Alex or anybody else has anything to do with. We've been under relentless attack for 2 years and more at this point. Really, the attacks began in 2018. It's been more like a decade of severe attacks, but the bankruptcy crap has really, you know, put a damper on our ability to grow and just continue operations in the way that we did. But that's all coming to an end one way or another. I mean, it's not that much longer this is going to go on. And it's been interminable. It's been exhausting. It's been extremely frustrating not knowing if we're going to survive or not. Again, not the fault of anybody here. It's just under attack. That's the way it goes. But we are coming to an end in this process one way or another. And like we've been talking behind the scenes about what's next and about changing the format of the shows and about, you know, moving away from the, you know, strict radio conventions more towards a streaming style, or maybe not, maybe going more towards documentaries. And I mean, we're like, we've been gearing up to launch the newest iteration for a while. So to me, It's never been a question, but it's less of a question now than it has been for the last 2 years about the future of InfoWars. We're like really on the cusp of a gigantic transformation, that things are going to change. It's going to be different anyway. But this is the place to be. This is the headquarters of the operation. This is the birthplace of the resistance. And there's a reason we've been targeted so much, and it's because the incredible impact that we've had. And I don't even want to like get into it very much, but I don't understand people's perspective on what they think InfoWars, like, we are a juggernaut. Do you understand that? Like, do you understand what it takes to have three live shows, 3 to 4 hours a piece with full crews, the website back end, like all the support we get? It is astonishing what Alex Jones has built here, and it's going to persist. And we're just about to get into act two here. So I'm extremely excited for what comes next with InfoWars. And I think if you want to bet on a horse that just keeps winning races and it has not showed signs of tiring out, you got to put your money on InfoWars. And just know that we're all in on this. And that by going to thealexjonesstore.com, you support whatever comes next. Whatever happens after the booster rockets deploy and we burst out of the atmosphere. And launch to a new and greater platform. So there's a sale going on right now. It's a limited time offer. 25% off all apparel at thealexjonesstore.com. This week, get 25% off all hats, hoodies, and shirts across the entire store at thealexjonesstore.com. This week's bestsellers in apparel include the Blacked Out InfoWars shirt, the Gulf of America shirt, Alligator Alcatraz shirt, tinfoil hat, Obedience to God circle hat, and just everything at the InfoWars store and the Alex Jones store are just awesome. The designs are so good. Some of them are more subtle. Some of them are more on the nose. And it really is true that you start wearing patriotic apparel around and you just meet cool people and nice people. And it will actually help you not be blackpilled, to be honest with you. I was wearing an NRA hat around this weekend. I met like multiple people. I was like standing in line at the grocery store. This guy tapped me on the shoulder. Hey, man, I was just looking at your hat. You ever seen this movie? He's telling me about a movie with Bradley Cooper. He was an ex-Vietnam guy. He's a sniper. We got in this big, long conversation. Like an old black guy. It was just like, yeah, I saw your hat. I love it. You know, let's talk. And it's just like, just wear patriotic stuff. Wear things that show that you love the Second Amendment, love America, love Donald Trump, and you will like make friends. It's amazing. It really is great. And thealexjonesstore.com is the place where we have all these incredible designs. Like I said, some people won't even look twice at the Gulf of America shirt. If you don't know what it's referencing, it just looks like a beach shirt. You know, most people won't look twice at it, but people who know, people who get the meme, are going to give you a wink and a smile and a thumbs up. And it's very fun. So meet your neighbors, meet your friends, show your patriotism. Go now to thealexjonesstore.com. Plus, get 40% off all knives and silver coins, including the limited edition Alex Jones signature battle dagger and the Midnight Rider limited edition silver coin. Hurry, this blowout sale ends this week, and it's your last chance shot to save big. Visit thealexjonesstore.com today and get 25% off all apparel store-wide. thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. And that's a great way to support us. Oh, no, I keep wanting to talk. Again, it's very strange for me to be in a situation where, like, you got hundreds of thousands of people all over the world that want to know about my coworker quitting. It's strange if you think about it. My ex-coworker, that's right, he's not even my coworker anymore. It's very sad. And you know what's funny about it is that everybody I saw online is like, you know, you're going to do great, Owen. Congratulations. You're going to go, you know, everybody support this guy. He's a great human being. But also, we love InfoWars. Like, it's weird that it feels like there should be some beef. It feels like there should be, people should be taking sides, but nobody's taking sides. Everybody loves Owen and everybody loves InfoWars, which is great, which is really awesome. And again, I really appreciate Owen not, feeding into the lies that people are still spreading. I mean, it's the other odd thing about this is people, like, if you listen to Owen's stream, and obviously people did, he's very clear. He lays out very clearly what happened, and yet people just have the completely wrong conclusion from it. And it's got to just be their own bias. It's got to just be their own, you know, inability to recognize or acknowledge that, like, their assumptions are wrong about things. Like, it was pretty clear to me. Like Owen said, he's been getting fed up. He's been getting, you know, and again, he sort of announced this already when we were first shutting down last year. Who's this? Oh. So this is what Alex said about it. Owen has wanted to go for a while. He told me he was quitting yesterday afternoon. He told me if I needed him another week, he would do it. And I said, no, it's that simple. I build InfoWars to be a radio talk show on TV. The office is a newsroom. So when big stuff would break, I and others would bring stuff to the show producers. That's as far as me standing over his shoulder went, except maybe twice a month walking onto the show. That's what we've always done on all the shows, including mine. I've known Owen for over 9 years and loved the guy. That said, when I started to watch what he said last night online, it was sad and I stopped. I wish Owen all the best for his life and the great work he does fighting evil and promoting freedom. I never censored him and agreed with 99% of what I saw him talk about. I only encouraged him to be more positive in general about that fact that humanity has come a long way in the Great Awakening. Bottom line is he wanted to be his own captain, and I think that's great. I'm surprised by the censorship claim he's hinting at, but if he thinks he needs to say that to build his show, then that will be on him. As for me, I'm taking the high road and will continue to promote Owen when I see cool stuff he does. Godspeed, Dylan. So that's a great response. That was a six this morning. And look, I agree. And I don't know, I'm upfront about it all the time. I mean, Alex does not tell us what to cover. Like, I don't tell Owen what to cover. I personally think it's hilarious when Alex, like, to me, if I know Alex is watching and he doesn't come in, I'm like, Maybe I'm not doing that great. I mean, it's a compliment whenever he comes in because it means he's excited about whatever you're talking about. But I guess we see that differently. I don't know. It just, but it's that type of stuff that, you know, Owen didn't, he said very clearly, he's like, I was in creative control of my show. You know, I just didn't like when Alex would like criticize me. I kind of think it's funny. Again, I'm upfront about this. If you watch American Journal, like I talk about this all the time. And again, it's, I don't know what other company or, you know, industry is like this, where like we talk to each other through the shows in a weird way. Like I'll tune into Alex and I hear him going, you know, the other guests are really down on Israel. And I'm like, all right, I get your point, Alex. And then I come on the show and I say, look, Alex is saying that we talk about Israel too much. Here's why I think I'm talking about it. Here's why I'm talking about it so much today. And, you know, I justify it or whatever. But we do it like almost through the show or through the audience. It's all so upfront. It's almost like comical. So again, I don't get that. I'm in this weird position where like Owen's complaining about things that I'm like the only other person in the world that is also experiencing, and I don't get the complaints. I don't understand it. I don't know. I guess, you know, he has a different mindset of how he was viewing the show, and I guess he's very like particular about what he lays out. I see the value of us doing a live show as we get to break news. Nothing is set in stone. I mean, if you want something scripted and by the book, like, you know, go watch mainstream news. InfoWars is a little bit off the cuff. It's a little bit wild. We do what to? We also watch mainstream news to get clips to show you how stupid they are. But anyway. Anyway, I'm sure we'll get back into it with Rex a little bit, but I do want to move on because there's other very important things to talk about. But yeah, I thought that was a great statement from Alex. But again, the thing is that people come away going, it's pretty clear that Owen was fired. It's like he said very clearly he was planning on quitting. He said, I was going to quit and I wanted, the only thing that happened was he wanted to basically spend this week quitting. I don't know if he was going to announce it on Tuesday and then it would be like a farewell tour for the next few days or whether he was going to save the announcement for Friday. I don't know. But clearly he wanted to leave. He was planning on leaving. He'd been wanting to leave and had the infrastructure built for a long time and he finally pulled the trigger. But then I got comments going, it was pretty clear from his stream that he was fired. And it's like, he never said that. He never even hinted that. He never said that. He made sort of oblique references to like having to cover things. But again, it's like, what do you think? Do you think working anywhere? This is what I don't understand. It's like any complaint that you could have about working at InfoWars, anywhere else you work, that complaint is going to be so much more massive. I mean, I talk to people in other outlets that will go unnamed, and they're like getting calls every show they do from producers yanking their chain, trying to reel them in. It sounds exhausting. I never have that issue. We never have that issue. I don't know. So that's what I don't get. That's what I don't understand. And then just when I'm reading the plug sheet, you know, one of the things, like Owen was complaining about that. I was like, I just want to do, you know, normal where just you have sponsors and you read the sponsors plug. And it's like, if that is all we do, we just have one sponsor. It's thealexjonesstore.com. But you get a plug sheet and you read the plug and you say, if you want to support us, go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison and purchase a product. I mean, it's very sort of traditional how we fund this. It's a unique twist to it, but we just do live reads in the same way radio has forever. It's like, would you rather be selling, you know, sports betting websites and VPNs? I mean, and you want to read their copy verbatim? Does that really sound fun? I don't know. I just don't get it, man. To me, the instant I think about, you know, going independent, I'm like, I got to talk to companies. I got to get ad reads. I'm going to have to deal. They're not going to pay me on time. And I'm going to have to track them down. It's going to be, that just sounds miserable. I mean, that is the benefit of, I don't know. That's like the greatest thing about working in Vords. I don't have to deal with all that crap. Why you would volunteer to deal with all that crap? That's on him. I just don't get it. I just don't get it. So I'm sad to see him go as well, but it's not the choice. Not the choice I would make personally. Now, yesterday, Donald Trump asked us a question. And I'm not going to be able to answer this question right now, today, in a fully comprehensive way that it deserves. But he asked us a question that requires a very thorough answer, since it's one of the most important questions of our time. He said this on Truth Social, quote, "It is very important that drug companies justify the success of their various COVID drugs. Many people think they are a miracle to save millions of lives. Others disagree. With CDC being ripped apart over this question, I want the answer and I want it now. I have been shown information from Pfizer and others that is extraordinary, but they never seem to show those results to the public. Why not? They go off to the next hunt and let everybody rip themselves apart, including Bobby Kennedy Jr. and the CDC, trying to figure out the success or failure of the drug companies' COVID's work. They show me great numbers and results, but they don't seem to be showing them to many others. I want them to show them now to CDC and the public and clear up this mess one way or the other. I hope Operation Warp Speed was as brilliant as they say it was. If not, we all want to know about it and why. Thank you for your attention in this very important matter, President Donald J. Trump." So Donald Trump is asking us whether Operation Warp Speed was a success or not. And again, this is I've always thought this with Trump, where he's getting information that to him, he trusts the sources. He doesn't know why they would lie to him about this. And they look great. And he's like, okay, so what's the issue here? Why aren't people, you know, if this is the information, if these are the numbers and they look so good, why aren't you telling people this? Because it's convincing. In the same way, I'm sure he saw a lot of his friends and family and the people around him during the first administration taking the COVID shot, or at least telling him that they took the COVID shot and that their kids took the shot. So he's sitting there going, I know all the people involved and they're all injecting their kids. How bad can it be? He's like, I'm not going to believe this is all nonsense because I know the people that developed it and they're all taking it themselves. So, you know, you can understand from his perspective why he would accept what they're telling him. Here's the problem, though. Sort of like mail-in balloting, they've designed the system to be impossible to audit. And we'll go to some videos to explain this. Let's go to clip number 18 here. This nurse tried to follow the law reporting COVID vaccine injuries to VAERS, although this may have been a pediatrician. She may have been a doctor. Regardless, she is a medical, you know, industry professional explaining why we cannot trust VAERS. Now, VAERS shows horrific side effects, massive spike in unintended results from the COVID vaccine. So already, just going from the VAERS data itself, it shows you that this vaccine had major problems over and beyond anything any other vaccine had ever experienced before. But that information is incomplete. Here's a nurse telling you why.
No one else in the entire system is seeing this. You're crazy and all that stuff. And so I gave them patients that met the exact criteria for which VAERS said we must report per the law. I don't know who did the audit, but they came back and said, we looked at things and you are over-reporting. And as a result, you can no longer report on any patients other than those that you directly took care of. After that happened, I said, if you're not going to let me report on all these other patients, who's going to do it? And they said, well, it's the provider's job and they're supposed to educate themselves. Oh. Basically, if you're going to talk about it, we're going to report you for spreading misinformation. And I kept getting reprimanded. They threatened to report me to the New York State Board of Professional Misconduct for spreading misinformation. Just a few months prior to that, I was nominated by my New York State Physician Assistant Society for a seat on the Board for Professional Misconduct in New York. It's insane, right?
So, even just going off VAERS, you can see you can't really trust that information because the people who were required to report to VAERS were being threatened if they did so. So what we can rely on instead are long-term population studies showing a rise in just one of the numerous known side effects to the vaccine, because at this point, the efficacy of the vaccine is not really up for debate. They admit it's not effective. So they really can't even make that argument. Now it's just a question of how severe the side effects were and whether they are the cause of all of these mysterious rises in turbo cancers and all this other stuff that we're seeing, which of course they are, but they won't admit it. Let's go to clip number 9 here. Landmark study confirms Operation Warp Speed unleashed a turbo cancer epidemic around the entire world. Let's watch. Remember problem clip 9?
Population level study that looked at COVID vaccines and cancer found massive increased risk of cancer. They looked at over 300,000 Italians, official government data. They followed them for 30 months. And there was about over a 20% increased risk of any type of cancer in the mRNA injected. But there was also about 50, 60, 70% increased risk of breast cancer, colorectal cancer. There was increased risks of various other cancers, even lymphomas, leukemias. And so this is so damning, right? So we have the experimental genetic molecular evidence very well documented. Now we have the population evidence confirming these increased cancer risks. And in conclusion, mass COVID-19 mRNA injection campaigns did cause a turbo cancer epidemic.
That's from the McCullough Foundation. So, again, I can't do it today, so I don't have time. But later this week, we're going to spend time really answering this question for Donald Trump, really looking into it, because it's not just about the lack of efficacy, which is well documented and acknowledged at this point. It does not stop the virus, does not stop you from getting it, does not stop you from passing it on. All of those things were always fake the entire time. But what you really need to understand is that the whole purpose of the pandemic itself, the lockdowns itself, the way the whole thing was handled was all designed from the beginning and even before the beginning of the pandemic. Before the pandemic had been announced, they were already planning to use it as a vessel to introduce mRNA vaccines. And they're on tape talking about this, and we have the Moderna tapes talking about how they were putting the infrastructure in place to produce mRNA shots about 2 months before the pandemic was even released. Operation Warp Speed, the only way you can consider it a success is that it stopped them from making the pandemic worse by keeping us locked down for longer. That's it.
The Eighth Amendment, written by James Madison and adopted on December 15th, 1791, reads, quote,
excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted.
End quote. Meanwhile, InfoWars continues to be under the heel of an excessive $1.5 billion fine resulting from kangaroo court manufactured accusations levied against InfoWars' First Amendment protections. While the federal government, especially the intelligence apparatus, has inflicted cruel and unusual punishment on InfoWars host Alex Jones and the InfoWars crew by surveilling them for 12 years under false pretenses and manipulating a key role in the ongoing show trials that never seem to end.
If you look down here in the middle of the document, you'll see that InfoWars has been classified as a white, racially motivated extremist organization.
Manipulation by major power players that now include former President Bush's and Trump's U.S. Attorney General Bill Barr.
Barr made target list of Trump associates Alex Jones, Nick Fuentes, Roger Stone, Oath Keepers, Proud Boys, and more.
On September 16th, 2025, Free Speech Systems, the parent company of InfoWars, faces a pivotal court hearing in Texas regarding its receivership based on flimsy allegations that Alex Jones filed a false affidavit about the company's assets from a lawfare juggernaut fueled by the deep state that continues to blatantly violate InfoWars' Eighth Amendment rights. Lo and behold, a recent precedent set on August 21st, 2025 by a New York appeals court offers a potential legal lifeline. In that case, judges ruled that a $450 million fine plus over $520 million with interest against Donald Trump in a civil fraud case violated the Eighth Amendment's prohibition on excessive fines, as no direct financial harm to lenders was ever proven. The court deemed the penalty disproportionate, setting a standard that fines must align with the offense's impact. This ruling provides a framework for InfoWars' legal team to challenge the defamation judgments as unconstitutionally excessive. Given the lack of clear evidence tying Jones' statements to specific monetary damages.
Yeah, the 13th Amendment says that you can't own somebody's name or make them a slave for debt. You know, that's the amendment that got rid of slavery. But you know what? Alex Jones is a different case.
Yeah, look, we won the bid. We own InfoWars, and we are very excited about
that. But is it true that you didn't have the highest bid?
We did have the highest bid when you take into account the family's concessions here. They made a concerted effort to make this the best and highest bid for everybody involved. So we're very excited to take that over. And look, it's Alex Jones. If he just handled this graciously and moved away, that would be the funniest part of this whole situation.
For the September 16th hearing, Free Speech Systems could argue that the $1.4 billion-plus dollar judgments are punitive beyond reason, threatening the company's existence and infringing on its ability to operate. By invoking the Eighth Amendment, Jones' attorneys may contend that the fines are disproportionate to the harm caused, echoing the Trump case's logic.
Judge clears way for the Onion to revive bid for Alex Jones InfoWars, and the Onion, which means Bloomberg, Everytown Gun Control Group, says they're coming back to buy it again. I wonder what magical sale that'll be. Oh, do you think there'll be a sale on the courthouse steps? Like the law says? Or do you think there'll be another magical event?
Triumph on September 16th could lift the crippling financial weight off of Free Speech Systems, preserving InfoWars as a beacon of unfiltered, raw truth. If Jones' attorney can expose these fines as an unconstitutional asset, it will ripple across the media landscape, protecting others from the elite's legal warfare. The courtroom is the arena. The Eighth Amendment is the weapon. And the fate of free expression hangs in the balance. John Bound reporting.
Coming to you live from the InfoWars headquarters here in studio with the one and only Rex Jones. You can follow him on X at Rex Jones News with a Z. Welcome back, sir. How you doing?
Here with you, Harrison.
Well, we got a lot to talk about today. Let's start with the drama everybody's interested in. What's your take on Owen leaving?
Well, you know, we all go through stages of life, and I think he really wants to be a radio broadcaster. I think, like, you look at his golden microphone, he's always been a huge Rush Limbaugh fan. I think that's his future, and I support it. I donated to his Give, Say, and Go, and yeah. I encourage other people to do the same.
Yeah, it's just kind of a bummer that he's leaving InfoWars. I was saying, I don't know if you're watching the show earlier, it was weird with everybody online, you know, congratulating Owen and being happy for him and being like one of the only people online with, I'm sure yourself as well, being like, well, but, you know, we're on the team that he's leaving, so I'm happy for him. It's great. At the same time, it's bittersweet.
Well, I mean, you and Owen came around the same time, right? Probably within a year of each other.
Just
maybe
about, yeah.
A little more, a little less.
About a year, I think, yeah.
I mean, you look at it, a decade is both a long time and a short time.
Yeah.
And I think it's moments like this that make you really realize how long it's been, you know, because y'all have been here forever. So it is truly a great loss, and I'm going to miss him a whole lot.
Yeah, yeah, I am too. But you know, I think he'll be hugely successful. He's a hard worker.
He's going to do great,
which is what it really takes. And of course, you know, he's got. And again, it's the funny thing about InfoWars is you would expect there to be some beef. You expect people online going, "Oh, I took that video. By the way, I took that video of him waving that flag on the hurricane. We had some great adventures back in the day." Back before War Room, before any of that existed, so much fun. But it's funny because everybody online's going, "Oh, we support Owen. You know, we want the best for him. He's great. He's going to do great." But also, we love InfoWars. So there's love on both sides.
I don't think you have to pick and choose, right?
Right.
I really don't. And I mean, you look at all the people that have left here. You know, like Savannah Hernandez would be a great example, right? Like, yep. This is independent media. And if you want to branch off from that, like, that's more than okay. You know, in my opinion, and definitely some sore feelings, but nothing too serious. We don't hate each other. We all love each other. Right.
Yeah, of course. And yeah, you know, it's almost good to have, you know, these satellite operations that all are born from InfoWars. I mean, the number of people, you know, Owen Schroyer enters now the very storied ranks of former InfoWars employees that all go on to do really great and amazing things. Joe Biggs, Savannah Hernandez. I mean, the list really does go on and on. This is even Alex Stein.
Alex Stein,
I would say, got, you know, he never had a show on InfoWars, but he had a show on Band.video and, you know, was guest starring on our programs before he went off and became a cultural force of his own. So, yeah, InfoWars is sort of the incubator for the ideas and the people that have changed the world. So it's really incredible, but we'll miss them. I know people are, I'm sure people are tuning in today to see what we say about it. And, again, we have this problem. I'm sure you see this too, Rex. People just don't hear what you're saying. It's very frustrating. We try to be very clear about things. And, I in the last segment, I was just making a comment on how sort of easy it is to work at InfoWars, and like you get a, you know, we have the alexjonesstore.com, you just plug that and it's easy. And
it's kind of a sandbox, you know,
yeah,
sandbox situation. Like no one is really telling you what to say or what to cover or what to do. But at the same time, I do understand Alex does want to talk a little bit more after his show. He's kind of a workaholic. So Owen being kind of a loner, independent type, always more of a radio broadcaster, he really wants that 3 hours to be his 3 hours.
Yeah.
And sometimes you got Alex coming in and putting a little tinfoil yarmulke on your head. Maybe it gets a little too much. So, you know, a little column A, little column B.
I don't get that. I don't know. I don't. Yeah. I think it's all.
But it's so it's funny, all in good fun. It's all in good fun.
This is the problem, right? We're trying to form a pack out of lone wolves. Like nobody on our side likes being told what to do or likes even feeling like they're under somebody's thumb, even if the touch is light. But anyway, we'll move on. We have actual, you know, real news to discuss. But I know we both talked about this yesterday when Owen left.
Indeed.
So it was a surprise to both of us and very unfortunate. Now, Let's talk about this. I have a feeling you're going to want to get into this, Rex. Trump says Israel losing public relations battle warns of declining support in Congress. I was confused about this because he's made very similar comments early. He made a similar comment in like 2016. Donald Trump warned that Israel is losing its once strong lobbying power in Congress as public support declines, especially among younger Americans. A March Pew Research Center found 53% of surveyed U.S. adults hold an unfavorable view of Israel, rising from 42% in 2022. Trump acknowledged a growing skepticism towards Israel among younger Republicans, with 50% expressing unfavorable views, up from 35% in 2022. He emphasized the need for Israel to resolve the conflict quickly, asserting it's hurting Israel. And again, the way that he said this is, if y'all can bring that up, I just printed the overview, but the actual quote is, quote, "Israel was the strongest lobby I've ever seen. They had total control over Congress."
Wow.
"And now they don't."
From the mouths of babes, they say. So, that's quite incredible. That's quite an incredible quote right there. You know?
Right.
Well, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure it out. I mean, Trump is someone who forever has had his finger on the pulse of the American kind of modern politic. He understands what's going on. He is very in tune with the voters, and he's always on his phone. He's always on social media. So for someone like that, that's so like locked in and tapped into what the common man is thinking online, to just have this blind spot, I mean, it's pretty evident he doesn't have the blind spot. He knows. So there's other stuff going on here. And I mean, he says it right there. They have total control. So,
I know. And there's a similar quote that he had, like I think in 2016 or something, where it was like, okay, he's actually saying something that most people won't say, which is Israel has control of the Congress. He's doing it in a way that he's saying it as if he's sad that they don't have that control anymore.
I wish they had more control. I don't understand why they're losing it.
Like, yeah. It's funny, but at the end of the day, he is saying Israel has control of our Congress, which is not something that you're supposed to acknowledge or, you know, announce being true. I mean, what's the implication? What is he doing? I'm trying to figure out what he's doing here.
I don't know. Where is he? Where has he been this past week?
What do you think's up with that?
Look, as someone that's just had a grandfather go through some medical trials and tribulations, I mean, people get old, people have medical problems, and we've definitely seen some examples of him not looking too hot. you know, with the swollen ankles and the bruising on the hand from repeated IV. I mean, we all, like, we know people that get IVs. Like, Alex will get a glutathione IV, like, once in a blue moon or something. You know, it's a relatively normal thing, even for middle-aged people to do. But you look at this current situation, man. They had that, they said, oh, he's going to go play golf. Mm. They had him out on the golf course, and they had the press, like, 500 yards away. And we get still photos of Trump. We don't get these videos, and he doesn't take press questions like we're used to, right? And there's still photos of him. He kind of looks like a beluga.
Yeah.
His forehead is kind of subsuming the rest of his face. It's just, I really wish he'd come out and take some questions from the media. I'd like to see what's going on with him because he's usually so brave about that.
Well, isn't that kind of ironic, though, that he doesn't take questions for 3 days and everybody's like, he must be dead because he's so accessible. And
I do think that's very important that we give him a little bit of leeway here before we make any bold proclamation about his medical condition or lack thereof or whatever. It has been like a little less than a week. Like, people get sick. Maybe he's got like a really bad flu or something. Like, who knows, right? And they just don't want to put him out there and have him look bad. But at the same time, I mean, Trump dies, we get JD, you know, and JD wasn't in the Congress 4 years ago. You know, JD's relatively new. He's working for Peter Thiel, and he's going to come marching on in, and he says he's ready to do the job. He said it last week, and that's a little concerning to me. And when you combine that with the elements of Trump talking about God and heaven and wanting to stop the Ukraine war so that he could maybe get into heaven and stuff like this, it's a little concerning. Because you'd think if you wanted to get into heaven, you'd end what's going on in Gaza,
right?
To be honest with you, because that's something that he could do pretty much instantaneously. All we have to do is stop giving them weapons, but that's the last thing.
Yeah, and that is, again, just baffling and nonsensical on top of all of it. And then he posted a Q message. I mean, again, He's Q posting. Trump is Q posting. President Trump has posted a cryptic pro-Q message on Truth Social stating the world will soon understand nothing can stop what's coming.
Well, we go one, we go all.
What do you think he's doing? I mean, what is he doing here? Is he just posting an image that he thought was cool? Does he know what he's posting?
I think it's that. Like, he posts the AI videos. Right. He loves it. Old people tend to love like these images of themselves and whatnot. It's more of the same. You know, I hope he posted it, because if he posted it, it's reassuring. But, you know, if it's kind of if you got a team or whatnot, concerning, because they're trying to appeal to that base, you know, that lowest common denominator when it comes to stuff like this, you know, like a 60 or 70 year old lady that's like, Trump is king of the world, you know, and I'm right. Like, oh, okay, all right. But if he thinks that, you know, is what it is, you know, he's an eccentric.
Well, and I just wonder if he, because obviously, when they say the world will soon understand nothing can stop what's coming, what that's referencing is the entire QAnon conspiracy, which is there are white hats in control, that everything is being...
Trump's in Guantanamo, interrogating Hillary.
Yeah, all that stuff. So it's like, okay, does he know that that's what he's referencing, or does he just think that's a cool picture of me with the world in my hands?
Well, I mean, this is a man that posted an edit of himself as the Pope.
That's right, he did.
Maybe we don't take that a little serious.
I'll always love Trump. It doesn't matter. Like, as even all the disappointments I have, it's been such a breath of fresh air in the political world, just having Trump around shaking things up. What happens now? I mean, what do we do here? Because Trump is not, he's not fulfilling what he needs to. And I'm not even just saying that as like, you know, I want to see Mayorkas and all these people in jail, like I do, and I think that's necessary. But he also had an opportunity to win people to his side with the effects of his policies. If he deports a ton of people and house prices go down, people are going to join, you know, his side of things just by virtue of it benefiting themselves or them seeing the positive outcomes of it. But he hasn't done much in the way of anything that will bring people over to his side, while everything he's doing for Israel, everything he's doing with the Epstein thing, is driving his own base away. So it's like he's losing his own base, especially the younger demographic, while nobody from the left is coming over to him. Where does MAGA go from here?
I think we're really seeing, and it's very sad to say this, a repeat of the first administration.
Right.
You know, where his cabinet has kind of taken the reins, has taken control, and he's just kind of a figurehead type of situation. And that's very disappointing, because you look at some of these people, like we've had high hopes for RFK Jr. We've had high hopes for Tulsi, maybe even high hopes for Vance initially. I've kind of lost that. But, you know, like we wanted these people to really fight for us and to fight for the country. And instead, it kind of seems like we got a little bit of oligopoly going on. We got hands being shaken and deals being made and overseas and, Steve Witkoff's son and, you know, Donald Trump's sons going over making deals, and like the bodies keep falling. That's the main thing. And just whatever you believe in, I'm a Christian, but like there's an element of like morality, karma, whatever you want to call it. Like there will be a price to pay for all of this. It's not free. It like millions of people don't die and nothing happens. Right. Something will happen. So if you look at what's been going on in the East, and you look at Modi and you look at Xi and you look at Putin, you look at them all shaking hands and clasping each other's hands and being very friendly and cordial to each other. That's not something we would have seen even a couple of years ago. And like, where is our leader at that meeting?
Right.
Why isn't he there with them? You know, that would make me so proud. People are like, that's globalism. It's evil. We need America. No. That's not how the world works. Like we need to be friends with our fellow nations, our fellow humans, even if we don't agree with their systems of government, even if we think that they're evil, we don't want to kill them, right? And it seems like we're the ones getting further and further isolated. And we pick these allies, right, like Israel, and what do they do for us? They spy on us, they send their pedophiles over here, and then they, you know, they message the 15-year-old, and they flee back to Israel, and, oh, it's okay. We don't talk about that, right? But I feel like we picked the wrong allies here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And again, we've been pointing out for a while now. I mean, if you project into the future and you look at the actual civilizational clashes that are building up, it's really between the West and China.
Right.
China has this, you know, anti-freedom system that's just completely at odds with our fundamental beliefs. And yet, what would be our greatest ally in a war against China would be Russia, this huge European nation that looms over China like the sword of Damocles. And yet, everything we're doing is pushing.
And then India is a replacement for the manufacturing capability. It's all right there. And that's the thing that hurts so much to see is like the pieces of the puzzle. It's like you got a jigsaw puzzle, but it's like five things. And he's like, I can't put it together. It's too complicated. And he's looking for the missing piece. He's looking for Israel on the ground. And like, that's the thing that's going to fit in and make everything better, you know, once we have total hegemony over the Middle East. And I just, even if we do have total hegemony over the Middle East, it's not going to be us.
Right.
It's going to be Mr. Netanyahu.
Right, right.
So it just, it boggles the mind a little bit. And like, I know, like, you're an optimistic guy. Alex is an optimistic guy. I am more black pill, but looking at things, like, you just honestly just pray that things get better, you know, because like I look at the situation. I hope my president isn't sick. I hope my country is going to be okay. But, you know, it's a rough one.
Well, it's tough because all of this is so intertwined. And I was just going over sort of last month's stories and just looking on, man, August was crazy. And just going through the stories.
Nuts.
And it's impossible to disentangle like what's happening in Gaza and what in Israel expanding in the West Bank. And then,
well, nothing's happening in Gaza. There is no war in Bosnia, as they say. Right. Nothing's happening at all. They're actually, you know, they have I see these videos every day of like a dude in front of like four pallets, and like the room could be like in South Florida, it could be in Azerbaijan, wherever, and it's like, I have so much sugar. Yum, yum, yummy. I eat the sugar. And it's just like,
What is this? What is really happening?
What is going on? And like, there's no truth to be found anywhere, sadly.
Yeah.
And like, you look at the Palestinian issue, you look at the photos that have come out, and they say, oh, these are all children with pre-existing conditions. This one child had a TBI, a traumatic brain injury. How did that happen? Israel dropped a bomb on the kid's head, and he fractured his skull and lost a piece of his skull. So, of course, in a famine situation, the weakest and most vulnerable, the sick people, are going to die first. They're not dying because they're sick. They're dying because they're sick, and they don't have food.
Right.
And people go, oh, look at the adults. The adults don't look like skin and bones. They got more weight to lose.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very, very simple concept. Like, there is famine in Gaza.
That's just
black and white truth.
Yeah, it's just this. Yeah. It's like physics. Like, yes, in famine, children die first every time. And that's true. And I pointed that out before, because people go, they're not targeting children with starvation. No, they're targeting a population with starvation, and the children are affected.
It's everybody.
First and worst.
Because they want them to leave. They have that wall right there with Egypt. Egypt is a weak country that we have a lot of influence over. They have a lot of influence over. They are just cranking that wheel. She's like, how long do we have to make this last? So they'll just take them in. We'll give them $5,000 a person. It's so insulting, you know? And like, that's a lot of money, right? Especially for people in other countries. But
No, it's
trail of tears, man.
But again, what the problem is for me is disentangling. So, or I don't even want to disentangle, but trying to establish the connections between, okay, you've got what's going on in Israel, and then you've got, you know, Palantir and the surveillance going on here and the pre-crime Gideon minority program, report. Minority Report stuff that they're bringing. And they're bringing in the banking information and the health information all in this one database that Palantir will control. They're building the cyber dome, which is like the Iron Dome. So Israel is now in charge of cybersecurity for Germany and America. And it's like I see all of this stuff as like deeply and intricately intertwined with each other. And it just is a giant tangled mess. And then it even gets more confusing where you've got the alliances somehow switching when it comes to like what's happening in the UK, where, you know, it's like you've got people marching for UK nationalism and they're going, all these Palestinians with their Palestinian flags. And it's like, well, wait, but the Palestinians
that doesn't compute. Yeah.
Just want what you want. They want a land of their own where they're not being forced out by foreigners. Well, that's the same thing you want. So it's all just confusing.
The UK has got a lot of Afghanis. They got a lot of people from Afghanistan. What happened to Afghanistan? What do we do over there? And then, oh, the poor refugees, Western countries must take them.
Yeah.
Like it's, but
it's a giant scam.
But then like Israel is our ally against the Muslim hordes. It's just like, but they're sending them here.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Actually, yeah. I do understand quite well.
And we're against the, you know, the censorship in UK, and J.D. Vance and Trump is saying, you know, we're going to put sanctions on you, or we're refusing to meet with the, you know, people involved in the censorship, and the censorship is insane. But that same censorship is coming here, and it's often at the behest of Israel or, you know, Israeli-aligned companies that are putting in the request to get things taken off social media. So it's all very, like, confusing, and yet simple at the same time, but we find ourselves trapped in this situation and unable to extricate ourselves, despite it seems like everybody in the world who's not in power wants the same things, and then the people in power want the opposite, and they always get what they want.
Well, I truly believe that if we took all the money and resources that were devoted to war and we devoted them to peace instead globally, we'd be okay. But people don't want to do that because the military-industrial complex is a beast that must be fed.
Right.
And all these people, like I've been following a congressional race up in New York, and we got this guy, Richie Torres, and he's everything that the neocon, like uniparty establishment would want, like black, gay, Puerto Rican, you know, but he invests in Northrop Grumman. He invests and all these like Raytheon type companies, right? And oh, you know, I'm friendly, like little guy with the funny tie and the different colored socks, but you're the guy killing people.
Yeah.
You know, but that's the good guy, you see.
Yeah. And did you see him on the Adam Friedland show?
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm referencing.
He just had no idea.
It's
just
it's a blank wall. It's a computer. It's right. Like error code. Right. This is not happening. Your information is incorrect. Error code. And you've got a guy sitting there that's Jewish and is sick of seeing
who lived in Israel for a year.
Who lived in Israel for a year, who saw the settlements, who saw the Palestinians were treated. And it's hurting him because he's someone that was literally raised a Zionist, and he's got to see this Israeli flag over all this death.
Yeah.
And you've got Richie Torres, a guy that's a goy, right? Right. He's a good goy for Israel, right? So he's I do not agree, I do not compute, I need more donations. He's received like $1 million from AIPAC.
Right, I'm sure.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and you know, that's such an interesting, I played that clip, but we never really got into it. And we played another clip right after that of another Jewish girl. I think she was American, she may have been British. But again, talking about sort of the psyop the Jewish people are subjected to, where it's like they're like terrorized with images of the death camps from the time they're 4 years old and told, if you don't support Israel, this will happen to you. And it's messing with people's heads. And yeah, the Adam Friedland thing, he's like crying, he's like breaking down going, what is happening here? It's like, dude, it's not that complicated. You got evil people that are using your religion against you. Just don't let them, like, stop falling for it.
Right. And that's the issue. And, like, that's the problem with, like, really all ethnostates at the end of the day, all theocracies. We talk about Iran. We go, Iran is a theocracy. They have a supreme leader. They have a Muslim government. And they follow, like, they try to follow the Sharia or whatever. You look at Israel, it's kind of the same situation. But it's okay because you can have gay sex. And I just say it doesn't. I've read Leviticus. That's not how it works.
It's so. all, Howard. I'm actually, there's a place called Sodom that I think they really tried that out. How'd that work out?
You know,
for them?
I just, ultimately, it's a religious battle. It's a religious fight. And it's something that America should not be a part of.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, right? Like, we have our own problems here. We have homeless. We have death. We have drug addiction. You look at Trump and you look at him going after Maduro. You know, at least there's maybe some justification there. You know, like, that's our hemisphere. Like, this is a massive problem. Hundreds of thousands of Americans die every year from this poison, this garbage. Like, that to me, even though I'm kind of an anti-imperialist, that's kind of Monroe Doctrine. That kind of makes a little bit more sense. You look at stuff like way over in like West Asia and the Middle East. Like, why are we there?
Yeah.
Why are we doing this?
Well, and I want to talk about all that. I want to talk about the marches that broke out in the UK and Australia and Japan over the weekend and get your take on that. And what you were talking about with Venezuela. I mean, they just, you know, killed the prime minister of Yemen. I think
that was crazy. Do we have the video of the bomb?
Oh, I haven't even seen
that. Oh, man. I saw that on Twitter like the day that it happened. It's insane. They took out like a big chunk of their government.
All right. Well, we'll grab that video and talk about it on the other side. I think they're playing for keeps here. Myself and Rex Jones in the third hour of the American Journal. I'm Harrison Smith. Of course, you can support everything that we do here by going to thealexjonesstore.com. It is now it's time to go. 25% off all apparel. Some of the best sellers include the Blacked Out InfoWars shirt, the Gulf of America shirt, the Alligator Alcatraz shirt. You can also get the tinfoil hat, the approved tinfoil hat construction guide. Their limited time offer, 25% off all apparel.
Let me tell you what I love. I love the new black InfoWars shirt with the Liberty Bell 1776 with the Constitution on the back. That is such a high quality t-shirt. All our t-shirts have always been high quality, but like the new fabric they're using, the new like template brand for the shirts, like some really good stuff.
That is one thing about InfoWars. You know, some people just sell you crappy shirts just to get your money, but like I still wear shirts that I bought before I worked at InfoWars.
Yeah, they got like a decade if you wear them like all the time.
Yeah,
you know? Like
they almost get better. The one with George Washington holding the AR-15, I still wear that to this day, and it's like only gotten softer and better. Highest quality material, best quality supplements, thealexjonesstore.com. Keep us on the air and in the fight, and of course we're going through a bunch of very exciting transformations right now. This is one of these headlines that you see every once in a while. There's a meme that goes around about it where it's like every once in a while there's a headline that's just, it's a correction of a problem that is shocking that it's even a problem. It says proof of citizenship to be required for Section 8 housing. And you read that and you go, well, that's good. You should require proof of citizenship. But to me, the big story is why are immigrants in Section 8 housing? How was that the case? Good that they're changing it, but like how many things are we just giving out to foreigners?
I've been to some of the Section 8 places around Austin. You know, like we have them and it's all illegal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Isn't that strange how that happens? It's like they have to cut them off welfare. They're like, yeah, maybe they shouldn't be able to vote. Maybe they shouldn't have Section 8 housing. I mean, they're, you know, maybe they shouldn't be able to get, you know, federal loans for small businesses. And it's just like, why are they getting
any
of these things?
That's
why are we having to reverse all this crap? It shouldn't be the case in the first place.
We love our Somalis. We love our Muslims, too. Oh, they're so good. Oh, they're so sweet.
So, you know, it's good to see this. On Friday, Housing and Urban Development Secretary Scott Turner announced that public housing authorities will have 30 days to complete an audit verifying whether tenants have a citizenship or eligible immigration status. So I guess immigrants will still be able to get Section 8 housing, just not illegal immigrants, theoretically.
Good, good.
Good, yeah, isn't that good? American citizens will be prioritized. Isn't that something else?
First time hearing of that.
Very Nazi idea. Do you see this as well? Really some karmic justice, I think, for Elon. Unfortunate, but necessary. A Chinese engineer hired by Elon Musk uploaded XAI's entire code base to OpenAI, then left the company and sold $7 million worth of stock, according to Musk. Zhiqin Li took a job offer at OpenAI before uploading the code. And, of course, people are posting this along with Elon Musk's freak out over the winter, over Christmas break, when he was saying, you know, go blank yourself in the blank if you don't want.
Is he a permanent
H-1B.
Resident or citizen? He's H-1B?
I'm pretty sure this was an
it's
H-1B
guy. The problem
guy.
With all those Chinese Indian dudes, those high IQs, you know, they might come in and get you.
Screw you over. Yeah. Big time. Hope it was worth it. Hope it was worth it. I doubt an American would do the same. So maybe some comeuppance there, but I'm glad to see, you know, more people.
Elon's quite busy with his like sex bot.
Yeah,
know?
I guess. Yeah, that is what I'm most
underage
tweeting
looking
about now.
Real weird, you know, That's a little
He really thinks AI pornography is the future of the world for some reason, but I got my own questions about that.
No, let's hope not.
But, you know, the question of illegal versus legal immigration is sort of blown up, and I think people are realizing this is not quite the important distinction that people think it is, that legality is often just who can be bribed, who's signing off on their friends coming over, who's working the system, just technically stay within the bounds of law while violating the spirit of the law in every possible way. And with all the big protests over this weekend, it wasn't just about the illegal immigrants in the UK and Australia. It's about the legal immigration, too, and Canada as well. These places are being destroyed by legal immigration, not just illegal immigration. And it seems like that argument is finally being made. Did you catch any of the big protests over the weekend?
What were your thoughts footage, on this? I saw footage, especially of the stuff going on in the UK. Like that was really huge and whatnot. I just, you know, if you don't have guns, you can't have a knife, you got to have TV license, how do you ever rebel against your government, right?
Right.
I don't think they have it in them. But we'll see, you know. I hope they do.
It seems like, I mean, things are definitely heating up, and now you've got the French president saying, you know, telling the hospitals there, be prepared for 50,000 injured a day or whatever it is, as they are on war footing and expect a wider war with Russia and NATO to break out.
Who's so, that?
Macron. This morning.
The French?
The French.
All right. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. All right.
Oh, no. They're going to beat up Russia. It worked last time, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, they're cooked. Ever since time of Napoleon, France has been cooked.
So. Yeah. Well, ask Napoleon how war with Russia went. It was the biggest disaster of his life, as it was with Hitler. Why do people keep trying to fight Russia? Just stop. The Mongols couldn't destroy them. Napoleon couldn't destroy them. Hitler couldn't destroy them.
Well, we talk tough and all this, but it's the biggest nuclear power in the world. So truly nothing could ever happen to them. If their sovereignty was ever truly threatened, they would launch, right?
Yeah. So, God only knows what they got going on in certain, the Arctic up there. They got more land than Canada. I
mean, and they're offering to do deals with us up there. Even now, even then, the Russians are still like stretching out their hand going, we have this nuclear powered icebreaker fleet. You don't have it. There are all these beautiful resources up there. Let's go up there. Let's go make this happen. I'm still positive and hopeful that we can get an end to the Ukraine war. Gaza, I'm pretty black-pilled on. They're going to do a new trail of tears there. I think that's pretty clear. But with the Russians, they're still trying to work with us, and we look at these weak sisters, these European allies that talk tough and want to go after them and punish them and attack them forever and ever and ever. It's not going to end too well.
I'm here to censor.
Oh, no.
He's here.
We've crossed the line.
You should launch a new independent show and claim that I censored you for years and get a million viewers and betrayed me. And you're allowed to lie about me any way you want.
You know I love you. No, this is, look, let's reject the let's reject the grabbler.
I'm using this as a case point. You understand that?
Mm-hmm.
How much have I come in and censored you over the years?
Yeah, not enough, frankly. I say some things I shouldn't be saying.
Have I ever censored you?
Never once. Literally never once.
Hey, if you want to quit and have a publicity stunt and lie about me, I forgive you, okay?
Well, that's
I know. I'm just saying I expected. Hey, David Knight did it. Owen's done it. And I tell you, I was taking the high road until I actually started watching it. And it's like Anakin Skywalker's become Darth Vader.
Can we sing a song?
When I go on the air, I'm letting you have it, Schroyer. You stabbed your brother in this operation in the back, and you're a fucking liar.
Can we sing a song?
Fucking asshole.
Can we sing a song?
Shit.
We're gonna take a little break here. We're going to sing a song. I'm angry. I've had enough of these people. They're a bunch of Christian murdering scum running giant death factories, keeping babies alive and selling their body parts. What more do you need to know about these people? I go out and face these scum. They literally crawl out from under rocks. They have green-looking skin, and they run around screaming, we love Satan, we want to eat babies. I have them on video. Hillary's into creepy, weird, sick stuff, man.
People don't believe me that we sing this song. Everybody in the office knows this song by heart.
We know it by heart.
And it's a truly beautiful thing. I realize how upset Alex was over.
It's tough, you know. Look, I mean, it's kind of a Batman and Robin situation. I really think they're both going to go on to do great things, but it's difficult.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree.
I didn't realize how upset you were.
It's totally normal to go and do innuendo that you've been censored and controlled and got to go because you're talking bad about Trump and this stuff. And then later, hours later, go, oh, no, he didn't censor me. All set up to boost himself off of lying about me. I don't ever get involved in infighting, but I've known somebody 10 years and they've been my friend, but he's gotten really dark, didn't talk to the crew, the last 2 years. And so it's like it's like a different person. I'm not here to be the villain for somebody's lie. So wait till you hear his phone call to me yesterday. He literally talked to me like it was a crack whore. He was a pimp. He's like, yeah, well, if you're desperate, pay me more, I'll stay. But I'm going to promote my new show on InfoWars, huh?
Let's take the high road.
Really nice. I might do a week. I was like, man, this is really hurting my feelings, dude. No, it's all right. You don't have to come in. I hung up, started fucking crying. And then he goes on fucking air and lies about me. Fuck you, you fucking piece of shit. I won't fucking take people stabbing me in the back anymore. Fuck you. Get ready.
So, because that'll be clipped, you can follow me at Rex Jones News on Twitter, and that's Rex Jones News with a Z. Very important that you follow me on Twitter. Thank you. Emotions running hot. Again, decade of work. Totally understand both sides' emotions a little too well, unfortunately. We're trying to do a show here, ultimately. So, let's get back to the news. Let's just get back to the news.
It's going to be exciting watching later, watching it all go down. And look, I'll say, yeah, I understand it from both sides, too. And, you know, the hardest thing, like, it's one thing when you got your enemies coming after you, expect that. But it hits different when it's somebody that you're allies with.
Well, but loyalty is a tough thing.
Yeah.
It's a difficult concept.
It is. The lesson I think we can all take away is that communication is probably the best, because I think there's some validity to what Alex was just saying.
I think so too. And I love Alex and I love Owen too. And that'll never change. I love both of them. And it hurts my heart, hurts my soul. They're kind of feuding right now, but I really think we'll move past this. And, you know, emotions tend to run hot. Sometimes we get angry here. Sometimes we say things that we don't mean. We all love each other. And Alex loves Owen. Owen loves Alex at the end of the day.
Well, that's why it hurts when you feel betrayed like that. But I do think, you know,
God, we're professionals, aren't we?
We are professionals,
classically trained, very good. We are professionals here. Now, this is not amateur, like Misfit Patriot. If he was sitting in this chair, he would have had a stroke. He would have had a literal stroke. He would have fallen over and started twitching. But, you know, we roll with it. We do a little judo, jiu-jitsu.
Well, and, you know, I guess Owen had problems with, like, the topics that we covered, because he kept saying, like, I just want to show that, like, you can turn on in your restaurant or whatever. And it's like, yeah, I also wish that what we covered was family friendly, but it's just not. When you're talking about rape gangs in the UK, when you're talking about nuclear war, when you're talking about, you know, what's going on in Gaza, it's like, sorry, it's got to get intense. It's going to get crazy. We are literally fighting for the future of humanity.
I think
here.
So, but I think it's also just like a volume level thing. And I do think sometimes, you know, like, Owen's more like quieter guy, Alex more loud guy, you know, I think a mismatch of energy there.
Well, I think Owen gets just as fired up as Alex does, but again, I get what Alex is saying about the, because it was sort of insinuated that he was forced to cover certain things, or he's like, I just don't want to, you know, the world is ending type stuff. And it's like, then cover whatever you want. I mean, folks, literally nobody ever tells us what to cover or what not to cover. We can cover whatever.
That's the first time Alex has ever walked in on us, you know, ever.
That's true.
Period.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, all these years.
And so anyway, I'll say it is true. I mean, I said earlier and I'll say again, I'm glad Owen didn't go, you know, say, well, you know, I wanted to say this, because he could have gone way overboard and made a big thing out of it. I don't think he did that, but he did insinuate that, like, he was forced to cover things he didn't want to cover, have guests on that he didn't want to have on. It's like, that's just not, maybe it was different with Owen, but that's never happened with me. Nobody ever tells me what to cover or, you know, comes in and says, you know, you're not talking about this enough, or that your tone isn't right on this. It literally never happens. So
I'm just a guest. I'm just a guest on my favorite show.
Yeah, right.
I've
been here since the beginning.
I'm like the little kid with a lollipop and the propeller hat, and the parents are fighting.
Parents are fighting.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel that way a little bit, too, to be honest with you. Yeah. Well, all I know is when I joined up 7 years ago at this point, even more, I joined up in spring of 2017, I guess. Owen had been here.
Owen came summer of 2016, I believe.
2016, yeah. So he'd been here for about a year, which to me, that meant he was an old, experienced hand, and I was the newbie. And it's just crazy that it's been so long. And I remember meeting you at 15 years old and being like, "Yeah, this kid's got a future." So it's
appreciate that.
It's good. You're fulfilling your destiny.
Look, Look, I love everybody here. And like that goes for Owen, that goes for Alex, that goes for you, that goes for the whole crew. I love everybody here. I think that everyone has brought a unique piece to the operation. The operation wouldn't be the operation. It wouldn't be InfoWars without this constellation of people, right? But 100%. At the same time, things change. People have disagreements and personal arguments. And I really think that there's a lot of that going on. Honestly, that's my personal take. I think as far as the show, I don't really ever think there's been that much of an issue. I think it's more a personal dynamics thing,
yeah,
in my opinion.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm channeling Rogan. I'm the best fence sitter I can. So I got the bald head and everything.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I
look at that leg kick.
You know, sort of want to thread the needle, walk the line as well. Because, like I said, I'm glad Owen didn't go full. Let's be honest. What happened with Owen is very similar to what happened with David Knight, and David Knight has gone out and said that he was censored. It's just not.
I disagree though. I really think that there were creative differences. I think that there was just personality difference. Like I said, David Knight's crash out was completely unwarranted. Okay. And that guy had some serious issues. I would come in here to film after his show and like the microphone would smell like rotten egg and he's just kind of.
I don't want to talk badly about him.
Well, I'm just saying I call balls and strikes. The David Knight situation, that's a lot different than this, in my opinion.
Yeah. But, and that's why I think Owen's handling it better. So I don't want to criticize him too much. At the same time, I got to counter signal some of the stuff he was saying about, you know, because again, it's like, especially if you're grading on a curve in terms of any other media outlet, who else is going to give you the freedom that we have?
David Knight is still Walter Cronkite compared to Joy Reid, you know, like right. even at our worst or our lowest, like we're still better than the rest.
Or just I talk to people at other right wing, you know, so-called dissident outlets and like they got executives breathing down their neck. They got advertisers.
This ain't the Blaze, I'll tell you that.
I wasn't going to mention the company, but exactly. I mean, other companies, like, you got people breathing down your neck all the time. So it's like, you know, Owen can complain about a time or two that he felt like it was insinuated that he shouldn't cover things.
Well, I mean, doesn't it speak to how really like toxic and horrible, like the news we've had to cover for the past year or two, especially with the Gaza thing and the Ukraine thing. And especially with, you know, looking at Ukraine as something that we thought Trump was going to come into office and immediately cancel that out. But there's a lot of abyss staring that's been going on around here, you know, and it's a lot of negativity because we've tried to be really positive and we were really positive back in 24. We thought Trump was going to come in and change everything. And now it just kind of seems like, you know, we're still in the middle of a battle. And I think everyone's real tired and everyone's hoping, you know, for kind of a changing of the tide, a turning of the tide. Type situation, and you know we're still out here kind of struggling to stay alive, and I think a lot of Alex's anger comes from the fact that he's been persecuted, he's been hunted down, right, still in court, and he's tried like hell to keep this operation up and running and still alive,
which he never needed
because
to.
It means a lot to him. And a lot of people go, Alex is controlled by the Jews, Alex doesn't cover XYZ because he's controlled by the Jews, Alex is too positive about Trump because he's controlled. I don't think that there's any of that going on. I think there's some hope for some legal justice going on, and I think that, you know, maybe there's some disagreements between Owen and Alex about, you know, kind of some positivity, negativity stuff going on. But, you know, it's a tough situation for all involved. And InfoWars has really meant a lot to so many people, including us. It just, I hate to see it, you know, I hate to see it.
Yeah, I completely. And everything you're saying is true about just like the nation and the world in general
it's a tough time.
We all feel
it's
like we're like, okay, we're sort of coming up to a deadline here. Like we got to do something quick now. And then on top of that, InfoWars being prosecuted, InfoWars being bullied, being shut down, you know, constantly on the chopping block. I mean, it is brutal, you know, not knowing what's happening.
It's brutal.
But it's nobody's fault, but our enemies.
It's brutal. Well, you know, I think we should have received some help by now, you know, and I'm just, again, armchair quarterbacking. I'm not involved in any of the processes around here, really the fight going on, besides trying to get more money into the operation, trying to sell a supplement so that we can stay on air, right? But, you know, it's taken a toll.
Yeah.
You know, I'm proud of this operation. I hope to see us transform and get better. And I think that's what's going to happen. I think that'll happen to Owen too. It doesn't have to be a negative thing.
Yeah.
And to make it a negative thing, I think is kind of an issue, you know?
Well, I just think that I don't understand Owen's decision because to me, having a place to go, having a headquarters, having this crew that's also incredibly talented, all working together. To me, that is the white pill. Like, I can't imagine doing this alone. Like, that to me is the crazy thing.
I mean,
like,
he spoke to it. He said, I worked at InfoWars for a decade, right? And I've never done anything for that long consistently before. That's something Owen said on the stream last night. I watched the whole stream. It was a good stream. I think he's kind of nomadic. I think he wants to move on just so he has that spark again, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I think he wants to be the number one. And there's nothing wrong with that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I think it's mostly born out of ambition. That's what I said about sort of the difference between Owen and I is he always wanted to be a talk show host. He wants to be Rush Limbaugh, and InfoWars was his vessel for doing that. I come from it at a different angle because
part of InfoWars.
Yeah, I wanted to work at InfoWars. Yeah, so you know, I'll do whatever position I need to be in because InfoWars to me is a literally legendary thing. I mean, because what happens is, you know, when you look back in history, everything gets kind of consolidated to where, like, you know, you look at ancient Roman history and they'll say, like, all these a million things were all invented by this one guy. Because it just sort of, you know, all the other people involved kind of filter down. You eventually lead with. So to me, like in history, when people look back at this, at the transformative media landscape that we're in right now, Alex Jones is the dude that's going to be in the history books. Alex Jones and InfoWars is the force that ushered in everything that you're seeing come behind us. He created alternative media.
Rogan created alternative podcasting. Alex created alternative broadcasting.
And Alex, of course, was the one that woke up Joe Rogan in the first place. Correct. So Joe Rogan, Tucker Carlson, they're all downstream of Alex Jones. So that, you know, that's where I want to put my effort in. But again, it's just like the value of having a crew here to handle all the technical stuff, having you know, a sponsor that I actually know and trust and use the products that I can support, having a headquarters, knowing that there's other like-minded people that we can speak our minds and talk to each other. Like, without that, I think I would have succumbed to the black pill a long time ago. So InfoWars to me is this, the thing about Alex that always made him compelling was, yes, he would tell you these horrible truths about the world, but he'd also go, now that you're aware of it, we can fight back. Now we can organize. Now we can, you know, activate politically and solve these issues. So it was never a blackpilling thing. It was never a, you know, the end is nigh, you know, go in the woods and hide. It's always about recapturing your sovereignty and reinforcing the supremacy of humanity over these technocratic control grids. And so it's never been about just telling you about how bad things are, you know, the world is ending by our products. That's never been the case. It's always been they're trying to destroy the world. We can save it together by exposing this and spreading the information and spreading the news and spreading the mentality of resistance. So,
I mean, look, you go basically anywhere else and like that covers like domestic American politic. There are some really good foreign politic discussions and some geopolitical people like Judge Napolitano, where you can get really high quality information that I would say is at our level or perhaps even better, you know, with like some of these foreign journalists and whatnot, talking about like facts on the ground as they happen. But I mean, you look at the modern American media landscape, I still think InfoWars does the best job.
Oh, yeah.
And people like Jimmy Dore, of course, people like Tucker Carlson, people like Fuentes, you know, and even though Tucker and Fuentes fight, I think there's still forces for good, ultimately,
for sure.
And it's just different aspects, right? So I think we have to kind of kill the infighting and realize that there are a lot of people doing really valuable work, and we don't have to tear each other down, and that goes for both parties involved. We can lift each other up. That's what I'm all about, because I've grown up around all this, like, I mean, even before, like, you and Owen were here, I was here. I was here before Trump. I remember how things were. I remember the true doom, the true black pill of Bush and Obama.
Seriously.
And hell world, right? And we got a taste of the American freedom spirit that came out with Trump. And I think that was so addictive for so many people that, you know, it's kind of like, we got to be critical, but we also have to acknowledge the progress that we've made as a society to realize, hey, even though we're not at the finish line, we know there is a finish line. We know that the majority of the country does want this. We do want to be positive. We do want to be good. So why fight? Why fight with each other? Let's lift each other up. Let's be positive. I'm going to continue to do that for both Owen and Alex. I'll continue to promote both of them because I think they're both great. But, you know, blame can be found on, you know, all aspects. Let's see.
Yeah. No, I just think I think it's almost a good problem to have, because it's almost like this wouldn't be possible if we didn't have domination of the media landscape at this point. Like it's
we're killing cable right now.
Yeah, literally, like, you know,
or eating their lunch. You know,
from Rumble to the way X has been opened up, I mean, we are dominating. So it's almost a weird position to be in because, as you point out, I mean, especially before Trump, I mean, nobody knew what was going on. This was so far from being mainstream understanding. It's like what the progress we've made over the last 10 years.
And Alexander wept for there were no more worlds to conquer.
It is kind of like that. It's like now that we're the media, we have to fight each other because the leftist media that we used to all fight, it doesn't even matter anymore. Yeah. So it's just us now. So, you know, there's a beneficial aspect of that. Well, Rex, you're going to have to come back when we can actually Indeed. Just focus on the news next time. But fantastic, as always, to have you in studio. Follow him on Twitter at Rex Jones News with a Z.
Please do. I'd really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And, you know, one way or another, you're starting to do new shows. So just make sure to subscribe to Rex at Rex Jones News with a Z. Keep up to date on all the new transformations InfoWars is going through. That's it, folks. Stay tuned. Alex Jones, 90 seconds.